everybody, and welcome to episode 567 of Video Game Apocalypse. I'm your host, Michael Raparez, coming to you from the Tommy Cash Memorial Studio of the Airwaves. If you got the cash to make it the U Memorial Studio of the Airwaves, go to patreon.com/lasertime. Join us at the $20 level. If you just want bonus shows, though, join us at the $5 level. Who's joining me now?
Palindrome-aged Chris Antista.
And...
1,000-pound club member Matthew Allen, for those who know.
Congratulations. Know. And special guest.
Deliverer of democracy.
Yes.
Tony Wilson of Framework. Hello.
Is that your Helldiver ship name? Yeah.
No, my Helldiver ship name is Fist of Science.
Oh, mine is Fist of Family Values.
You guys can fight.
One's the right fist, one's the left fist.
Framework. This is how we do. Tell us about Framework. What is Framework?
I'll give the spiel as I do when I'm on the show, because thank you for having me back. Always glad to be here. Framework is a channel about the little things that make big differences in your favorite games. The most recent thing, as of the time of this episode going up, is I did a short lining up FX's Shogun and Rise of the Ronin. Historically, these are two things that are probably crossing in your brain. Where do they actually take place, like in history? Just a quick little explainer of that. I did some Final Fantasy stuff recently. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff over there. Go check it out, because I don't like to toot my own horn, but it's pretty good.
Cool.
It's pretty good.
And on a similar note to all that, I did also recently start doing just some freelance on the side for IGN. So if you're playing Rise of the Ronin and need a little help and you're looking up some guides, you'll hear my voice in several of those.
Oh, shit. All right.
So I've been playing it. I'm itching to talk about it. That's why I messaged Michael.
Rat.
Like, yeah, hey.
A review, whatever, a guide writer, know everything.
Yeah. That's how it goes. I mean, it's all collaborative, right? Like
you're
on Discord, as you know. But I've spent a lot of time with the game. And, we'll talk about it more later. But I like it a lot. I really do. I get the sense I'm going to be in... not like a small minority on that, but I'm going to be in a smaller crowd that thinks it is actually great and not just like whatever. But yeah, we'll get into it later.
Yeah, it's a big week, but Chris?
It's a big week. Oh yeah, I like to annoy Michael at the top of the show, and I'm really going to annoy him here. Because I had a birthday. Nobody say anything. Shut
I won't.
Up. You had your opportunity.
Unhappy birthday.
Oh!
Just kidding.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for all the kind texts and all that shit. I got a couple... could you believe it? I get fun cartoon-related stuff, very affordable stuff for my birthday at this point, because birthdays are for children. I wanted to show you a gift I got, and I want Michael to say, almost on cue,
okay,
this is going to work great on audio. Oh, you're not going to say it now.
I don't know what you want me to say.
I just said it. I'm going to show you a gift.
Who's on first? What's on second? I don't know.
Chris, I got you.
I'm
going to
show you
a
gift. How do you feel about that, Michael?
Fantastic.
Usually this is where you'd say this is going to work great on audio, as if I wouldn't describe it at all. Oh. But
okay. Chris, but, I was actually about to say it, but you prompted Michael, so I didn't spike that ball.
Even worse.
No, okay.
Cuz this is a smell.
Oh.
This really doesn't work.
Really
on audio.
It doubly doesn't work.
I get a lot of cartoon related stuff. My mom really blew it out of the water this year with Mickey Mouse cologne.
Wow.
Please ignore the $9.99 TJ Maxx sticker scratched out of the back. This is what my mother got me for my birthday. I can smell like a rat.
Well, you want to smell like a mouse's taint?
a rat wearing shorts?
Want to know how I landed Minnie? Couple spritzes of this.
I don't care about the Muppets at all.
This was taken directly from my anal glands.
Why don't you ask everyone in Star Wars how they got rid of their nicotine addiction?
Dude, the mouse is over there smelling like garbage again.
Hey, yours smells even better when it's soaked through a pair of felt pants.
Smells like regret and semen, Mickey.
I haven't smelled anything that delicious in Slave Leia. Did we not come up with a better name? What does Boba Fett drive again, Mick?
Indentured Servant 1.
He drives Boba Fett's ship.
Sorry.
Jesus.
All right. I don't care about the Muppets at all. Huh?
Sure.
Just bookend it with a...
Yeah.
It's not easy being green.
It's fucking Mickey Mouse cologne. Where do I even put this?
Well, usually, like, you know, around the neck and a little behind the ears.
Just saying. It's
on a shelf next to your Steven Seagal energy drink.
right next to my Ric Flair wings or something like that. Something immensely classy I paid too much for. The bottle is ridiculous. It has mouse ears as a topper.
Of course it
does. I let the woman I'm dating decide how I smell, so I'm going to have to let her get a whiff of this. But anyway, happy birthday to me. I bored you to death.
Like I said, it's a big week. We got two huge open world games coming out at the end of the week. We got a Princess Peach game coming out. We got a game starring Stranger Things as David Harbour.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Guys, we're going to have to sit Michael down and talk to him like, Michael... Alone in the Dark is not a AAA game. You're not required to care about this anymore. Stop
Michael,
it. It's going to let you down.
I do care about the original, so you're not alone in this, but I don't think I'm going to be playing that remake.
Yeah, no, I guess I'm alone in the dark on this.
I've known Michael for 20 years. He's like, hey, anybody excited about this Alone in the Dark game? Like, I'm excited for you.
I was trying to be optimistic for it, Michael. I was there with you, too, but... Anyway,
I played it for like half an hour. It is just getting started, obviously, but like it already like if you are a fan of the old Alone in the Dark games, like they immediately start throwing little references and Easter eggs at you. And so it's like, OK, yeah, no, this was clearly done by fans of that 90s seminal horror series. We'll save it for new releases. But in the meantime, something completely unrelated to this week's releases prompted this week's top five some brave soul posted a video of this game on social media.
Let's go! I know Eat the Rich. It's the second song. It's the second song on Get a Grip. I think I know the song.
Yeah. Revolution X, yes, the 90s arcade shooter with Aerosmith. It's one of those things it's really cool the first time you see it. Every subsequent time you play it, it gets a little bit less cool. And then if you get the home version, you start to realize that, like, oh, they couldn't fit the full song of Eat the Rich on here. So it's just like a 20-second clip that then noticeably replays in the middle of the action sequence.
Or you feel like me, we're like, oh yeah, I hate Aerosmith.
Yeah.
What deal with the devil did they sign to get so many fucking video games and roller coasters on multiple continents?
Yeah.
What the fuck? I thought Steven Tyler was me too. Let's get rid of this Aerosmith.
Why did they get massive in the 90s where they were like...
Yeah.
And what was that? There was like an MTV Music Video Awards that like gave the best alternative award to Aerosmith, and I think they got best metal too. It was stupid.
It was They're for driving men. Amazing crazy.
Mm-hmm. It might have been for the Pink video. I'm not sure, but
I actually kind of like that song.
Just gonna call out the irony of a band who was super wealthy already by then singing a song called "Eat the Rich." Like, come on, dude, give me a fucking break.
But I'd like to point out they were probably our age.
Oh God,
when that album came out.
Yeah, probably. The reason I'm bringing it up is because that is a weird game with like one really cool gimmick. That moment in the first level when you go into the club. Club X and shoot your way through, and then Aerosmith's playing on a stage and they're playing a real song with lyrics and it's playing as you're killing all these other guys, and it's just a memorable moment that kind of
it's
the high point of that game. I think
it's incredibly memorable because like real songs appearing in games was amazing, or like known songs was like it was an amazing feat back then, and I would say it became much less of an amazing feat to where we are now. It is amazing again, because unless you're playing a music-based game, no one wants to license an immensely popular song in perpetuity for their fucking game. Like, I don't know how movies get away with it, because they don't have to keep re-signing these contracts, but games do. And certain games have to get changed because their title screen song has to be changed. I'm not pointing any fingers to places I may have worked. But, but yeah, like... licensing music for your game is kind of like you're hanging a giant stone around your neck now.
Yeah.
Like, you mostly don't want to do it. I mean, who knows? The only thing I can think of is, like, will we see Brutal Legend again with its whole soundtrack? I kind of doubt it.
That's right up there with Def Jam for, yeah. Probably not going to happen again.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't license music for your games. EA would do that all the time because they'd license, like, a group of songs to put in all their games because they knew their games had a shelf life of 2 years. We're not going to sell this again.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so, even now, I've had more fun musical moments in games the last year because it's so fucking rare.
It is.
Mm.
Yeah, I wanted to dedicate this week's top five to surprising musical moments in games inspired by that wonderful example.
So please tell me Spider-Man 2 is not in here.
It is not in here.
Because that was so out of nowhere. Like, did it read something on my hard drive? Why is it playing The Shins? Why is this happening?
Oh, man.
Because it's like Garden State. It's going back and where his origins were. It's like his hometown, except he never left his hometown.
I get it, but it's just tough to swallow that someone who grew up weaned on Garden State is in a more powerful position than me in gaming and can put that song in a game.
Yeah. Well, I'm also
Spider-Man 2.
I'm not counting things that just play in cutscenes. I don't feel like that counts. This has to be things that, you know, just kind of creep into the ambient soundtrack during gameplay. And that maybe guide the gameplay sometimes in non-rhythm games where it's not expected.
And we're not counting games with licensed soundtracks, like GTA has licensed songs all the time because it's a radio station, right? So it's...
Well, I mean, I think some of these are licensed, but they have to be used in a deliberate way that fits the mood.
I think that's what's funny is, like, at one time, the miracle would have been just getting a whole song in a game, and then games started being made on CDs and DVDs, and that was very common. It's like, oh yeah, you can do that. That's a thing now. It's not taking up too much space.
We can fit many songs on here.
Yeah. And so I think the point of this list, if I understood it correctly, and we had a lot of debate about, like, I think I understand. Michael's like, I don't think you understand. I'm like, I think we do.
Some argument. I was cranky. It was the end of a long day.
This is every week for the show. But but yeah, fun little fact about GTA.
Yes.
You won't have common shared licensed music moments because even when you go into, like, a strip club, it's different depending on when you go in.
There's one point that's the same for everybody. Where it's a cut, but it's a cutscene where you're driving someone home and they force a radio station song, but that's it. Like,
because I think they wisely, like, if we're going to bring this game out again in 10 years, don't score your game with the licensed music. The licensed music has to play organically in the world. So there's not many GTA moments that are scored to the same song. It's just whatever you're listening to at a certain time of day.
Yeah, but let's begin. Well, you know, they'll figure it out as we go. Let's begin with...
Number five.
I know what this is.
I don't know. What is this, Stomp?
Well, you do a lot of stomping in this game.
A lot of falling, too.
Slay Poo?
What's the name of the band? Because the name of the band is like The Quiet Storm.
Low Roar.
Low Roar, that's what it is, Low Roar.
Low Roar, it's like Rural Juror, Low Roar.
This is from Death Stranding. It's
I was going to say, this is the one of the five that I have not actually played, which is why I figured out what it was.
It's very cinematic, it's very cool, because it does a thing, to his credit, occasionally... The maker of this game, Hideo Kojima, he nailed some cinematic moments. Like, this is very much like a movie's opening credits, where it is already sort of established the world you're in. There's been cutscenes and stuff, and then it depends on how long it takes you to get here, but it could be 20 minutes or more into the game before this starts happening. And it's like cinematic camera pulls back. You're just doing the thing you do in that game. You're being a delivery guy who's walking deliveries from one place to another
side.
But it pans out and you see this, you know, kind of barren post-apocalyptic landscape and you on it, and it has that cool song by... I'd never heard of that band, but it's really good. And they have a couple of songs, I think, in the game. But that moment surprised me. I was like, oh, I was not expecting that whatsoever, you know?
Well, they're like, I think... 22 different moments in here like this. So this takes a lot of cues from a game that will be further up our list.
It kind of originated this idea of like, oh, cool song just starts playing unexpectedly while you're exploring an open world. There are a bunch of different places throughout the world and throughout the story where you'll be wandering along, maybe after something dramatic just happened or something cool just happened, and like this song starts playing. And really, it makes the whole thing sound a lot like an indie movie from the 2000s.
It sounds, like Drive.
That's a better comparison.
Yeah. Drive. It really is. Talk about Drive. Bullshit replies. The
words you'd said. And the colors I can hear the Stranding sound effects in the background. Yeah. When's the baby going to start crying?
All I can hear is my unborn daughter making me tea. This is too pleasant.
So, Chris, speaking of Drive, I saw a movie that was like trying Paul to be Summon? Drive. The other
Which
day.
One?
Love Lies Bleeding is trying to be Drive great. And not succeed. No, it is not.
I don't think it is an excellent movie, and I don't think it's trying to be Drive at all.
That movie's fucking weird. It has some good moments.
I thought it was great from start to finish, and I don't think it's trying to be Drive whatsoever, to be honest with you.
The movie fucking sucks.
I thought it was great.
Ed Harris
honestly,
is great.
Ed Harris was... All right, we agree on that one. He was very good at that movie. Also, the fact that we are at such polar opposites... is why people should probably watch that movie.
Yeah.
Anyway. Death Stranding has... Yeah, you're right. It has a lot of these moments. Right?
Most of the songs are by Low Roar. Some of them are by Silent Poets. One of them is by Ludwig Forssell.
Von Beethoven?
Yeah. Sure. Ludwig Forssell.
I have faith when they do something like that, that there's a extended contract with the band rather than games that license one pre-existingly popular song. Let us help each other out here and be in this game forever, please, with no fucking just head-scratching negotiations every 5 years.
So we don't have, like, the state of video games.
Yeah, well, I cannot believe MTV had a blanket rule. If you give us your music video, we can use your song in anything. Even the AIDS documentary? Even the AIDS documentary. That's where you're going, spin doctors. How many episodes of The Real World open up with King Missile's detachable penis? They never play that video. They use that song for free constantly.
They played it on Beavis and Butthead.
I think
they did.
Yeah.
Can't you unlock a detachable penis in Death Stranding? Isn't that one of your weapons?
Wouldn't surprise me. Might be more of a Saints Row thing.
Yeah, I will say, like, I gotta give, you know, I've not played Death Stranding. I've been told it is something I would not enjoy based on my experience with a similar game, which... is will maybe come up later in relation to something else on the list, but I gotta give credit where it's due. Like, Kojima does know how to pick and use music, you know, like when it comes to his trailers, it's often, you know, it's in a similar vein to Tarantino, where it's like it is often not a song I'm familiar with, but is so perfectly suited to the mood, and like that is a skill the man absolutely has and executes on. And so, like, you
I
know,
like the Metal Gear Solid 5 trailer more than I like the game.
Yeah.
Because of the music choices.
The Here's to You, Nicola and Bart. Oh, that one.
I forget. I was at an E3 on the floor, and it just every time that ran over, I'm like, I'm going to watch this because I like this more than the music in our booth. Except for Guile's.
I remember that. Was there the booth built to look like the bass from the game? It was like the gray pan. Anyway.
You know, E3, how about that, huh?
Maybe.
That was a
E3,
thing.
That was
sure was a thing.
That's a memory back in my day. We had E3.
I know, right?
Three E's.
You Zoomers in your Summer Game Fest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what's funny is real quick aside, I've gotten so many requests like, are you going to GDC? Are you meeting at GDC? That never used to happen. There is a huge void, as we've said on the show, where people want a thing to meet at have an industry event, and we're not all game developers, so we shouldn't all attend the game developer conference. But that's anyway. True.
I gotta say too, just for however many years it's been now, can we stop putting PAX East and GDC at the same like weekend or within a week of each other? It has been that way for like a decade, and guys, come on.
That's also PAX West and Gamescom. They're the
right.
same.
Right.
They're
it's like, can we not do that, guys? Can one of you budge?
I mean, one's still an industry event, one's a fan event. I see where they're going.
Yeah. But there is enough overlap that it's more on the dev side. That's hell. Like, specifically for like a lot of indie teams, it's too much.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. Anyways, that is an aside, like you said. But
Yeah. Death Stranding. Did any of
coming
you play
off the soapbox.
The director's cut? I did not.
Yeah, briefly. I just checked out like the new, they're not weapons, but like the new gadgets and stuff in there for a bit. And to see it on my PS5. It was nice. It was fine.
Yeah, that's what I, like, I didn't hate the game, but it didn't click with me fast enough to what I had in my queue. But it seems like something I'd be a little more interested in later down the line when I have nothing else to play.
I feel kind of similarly because having not played it, the Death Stranding 2 trailers look awesome.
Yeah, I kind of want to be on this train. I want to be on the Death Stranding train.
And I know that there is stuff along those lines within Death Stranding. It's just what I've been told about Death Stranding means a whole lot of gameplay. I'm not particularly interested 90% of the time with some of that cool stuff happening.
Mm-hmm. I would say don't judge it based on what you've been told about Death Stranding. Yeah. Like, you gotta, I hate to be that guy. It's one of those games you sort of do have to experience for yourself because no one's going to describe it accurately. Like,
That's valid, but I've been told, like, as a direct comparison, because I am in the camp that cannot stand Red Dead Redemption 2 and how that game was put together. I've been told as a result of that, several people were like, oh, then don't play Death Stranding.
Wait, if I pull up, is this T.L. Foster underneath the Tony Wilson mask? Like, you have the worst takes on today's show.
I would not compare those two games also.
No, nothing okay. like
that. It's been done several times.
I feel like both are deliberately paced games.
Yeah, Death Stranding is like one of the few games that can legitimately be called a walking simulator because it simulates walking across very difficult terrain that is like the terrain itself is often the puzzle and, you know, improvising tools to get around it. And then
what about QWERTY and baby steps? Those are,
I mean, those are common. Fumblecore. That's the
name of the subgenre, Fumblecore.
Uh-huh. But like, if you're the type of person who likes to grab all of the groceries out of your trunk at once and try to get into the kitchen like that, is the game for you because that's most of what you'll be doing.
I'll open the door with my mouth.
Yeah, exactly. and then eventually you get trucks, and the game becomes much easier, and you're able to focus on other things.
I'm sorry, I just have to spit this out. Snape killed Fumblecore.
Please make that the title of the episode. Oh,
I should say, Snape killed
Fumblecore? Yeah,
for the rest of these, that's actually a good lead-in to something I forgot to mention. Some of these, because these are surprise musical moments, we might be getting into specifics on some of these. So I'll have spoiler warnings.
Yeah.
As we name the game, we'll say like, spoiler, fast forward to this if you don't want to hear about what this is. You will hear a little clip though. For example, you will hear
number 4.
So that happens fairly early on. If you don't want to be spoiled on things that happen in Super Mario Wonder,
the second level and in the trailer
that are purely tied to musical moments, fast forward to the 33-minute mark. Okay, the rest of you who are still listening, let's get into Super Mario Wonder. So that is like for many the big surprise moment early on in Oneater, in Wonder.
It's the perfect way to tell you, like, every level is going to throw you something unexpected and you don't need to be afraid of it. Because sometimes it'll just be something relaxing like this. Because the level doesn't get harder when the music starts. It's just like, holy shit, how choreographed is this? What is going on?
Yeah.
And as if you stomp out individual ones, it like removes voices from the chorus.
If you kill piranha plants, you remove legitimate channels of the song.
I feel a little bad.
Yeah, don't do it.
A little bit. It is such a... And honestly, like, yeah, it's level 2, but like, personally, that's my favorite Wonder effect in the entire game. Because it's just hard to top that. It's so delightful.
It's hard to top that. And it's not even something they can really do again.
Except they do. Right. There is a reprise later on, and they are not the only singing enemy. By the way, last chance to fast forward if you didn't believe me about spoilers earlier.
Oh,
right.
So that is from the Light Switch Mansion level. You're being followed by a giant King Boo who sings operatically, and when you turn and face him, that's when you hear that version. Man messes up his lyrics. He gets too shy. And eventually, in the final battle levels against Bowser, these two menaces come together to threaten you one after the other. The percussion sound you're hearing is actually like these little doors with legs that are just like opening and closing in time with the music.
Yeah, it was just, I love it because it's something like they told you about this in the trailers, but like it was really hard to expect the charm that Wonder threw in your face.
Yeah,
and there's a part of me, am I alone? I wouldn't be mad if Super Mario Wonder 2 hit this holiday and the next two holidays until they wear the franchise out completely.
Yeah, they could totally do a new Super Mario with this, where it's just like, yeah, we added a bunch of new levels and like two new powers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used three powers with any consistency where I wasn't required to.
Yeah, the thing with Wonder, though, is that, so the Wonder Seeds, like, they're almost all unique. It's not enough to make a bunch of similar looking levels that each have like different layouts that challenge players. That's how it used to be. Now you have to come up with something strange for each level to do.
Yeah.
And I can understand that probably takes a long time.
Yeah, a harder feat to come up with a surprise, like 60 surprises.
Yeah. Mm. And that these are levels that can be played through generically without triggering that effect.
The Wonder Seed is optional. Yeah. It's one of the things you can collect.
Mm-hmm. And it will change the entire level, and that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, like, I don't know that this is the kind of game you can release on an annual schedule. That seems like
I think it's a little harder to produce on an annual schedule, but, like, I'm excited about this as I was about New Super Mario Brothers until they completely wore that franchise out. Like, wore it to the bone.
Yep.
Eight releases in eight years.
I mean, I have to imagine we'll get more, and I would love to see this motif. I know that we've already seen kind of what new 3D Mario could be with, like, Bowser's Fury, but I would love to see a bit of Wonder in that, too, you know, in 3D Mario. Like, imagining the same kind of thing in a 3D space.
Yeah.
Be so cool.
It would be interesting if that's the new coda for how a Mario game is made, and that is kind of how all the 3D games operate. Like, surprise. You're going to be do something completely different in each one of these challenges.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting aspect that wasn't always there for Mario, but maybe always was, now that I think about it.
Maybe. I mean, Wonder is, you know, and Nintendo has said as much, it is the start of, like, a new chapter of Mario. And, you know, from an animation standpoint, that's pretty clear, too. And then, yeah, Wonder Seeds are great. And yeah, the singing, it's...
And the voices, it's a me, thing. Mario.
Yeah, I took... yeah.
I'm the new Mario, yes.
You sound like the new Kermit.
Yeah. what was nice, too, is specifically for this... So that game, the game released, what was it, October of 2023, right?
Matt would know.
October. but so it came out, and I remember, so I'm like the fun cousin in my family, right? Like, I always bring my Switch and, like, you know, some new, I'm the fuzzin', and I always bring over, like, new games, my little cousins always, you know, they always have a great time, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. They love Mario games. I'm going to be taking them Mario Wonder this year. This is going to be a hit. I know they're going to love it. And yeah, like, when the first Wonder Effect happened, when this Piranha Plant moment happened, like, it was so cool to just see that wash over kind of their young faces, too. It was awesome.
I recommend it to everyone with kids and a Switch. Like,
it's awesome.
I know it's a $60 game, but you gotta do it.
And to top it off, because they have their own Switch, right? So I gave them the cartridge. I was like, hey, make sure, you know, I get this back before I leave, whatever. What they didn't know was I had it downloaded digitally, and that was their copy to keep.
Aww.
Yeah. Aww. It was nice. I was very, very proud cousin in that one. They were very happy.
You'll never forget the look on those kids' face when they play that, turn to you and say, "Now can I have Robux?"
Yeah, there's new Slender Man
mod. Can you give me
what
I really want?
Yeah.
Oh, they're not my kids. I only have to take care of them for a little bit when I'm there.
By the way, your Mario character is mid.
That is 100% something the oldest boy would say. And has to me. He is the one who will walk around going like, "Why are you mad? Why are you getting mad, bro?"
They'll call you a bacon hair, pull your pants down and run away. And yes, bacon that hair. Is bacon hair is a real insult to them.
Bacon hair? Bacon hair?
Mock my riz? How dare you?
I know.
How dare you?
Bacon hair is what you call a new Roblox player because the default hair looks a little bit like wavy bacon.
Holy shit. Really?
Of course it does. That's ice cold.
Hmm. I got something to talk to my girl's kids about. Thank you.
Get thrown around on, you could call that on the jungle gym. That's like a slur.
I spend way too much time on that jungle gym. Hmm. But that's what everyone gets for making McDonald's Playland pieces outrageously expensive in the last 6 years. I was going to have my own recreated Playland for like $700. And then boom. Collector's prices. Everything's 10 grand. Just a piece.
Oh, well, at least that guy's getting paid.
Who? Jethro, who sold the abandoned McDonald's?
Yes,
slide?
Exactly.
Yeah, I was going to use it as a water pump, but I suppose you can take it.
Yeah, I call him Grandma Copper. But yeah.
I don't know. I was in there stripping the copper out of the wires in the old McDonald's, and I saw this thing in the playground.
I will admit, I have pleasured myself to the Lady Nugget. It's true.
And then boom. Is that
let me ask you guys this, or Chris, you would know, being from Florida, maybe, and you're kind of near Southerners, so like all of my relatives from Alabama call it McDonald's, like McDonald's, and it was always McDonald's.
That does feel like oddly threatening.
I've only heard that pronunciation like a D.L. Hughley bit, I think.
McDonald's?
I was going down to the McDonald's.
McDonald's, no. Mickey D's. That's what everybody calls it.
Yeah.
Macca's, if you will.
No.
I just go ba-da-ba-ba-ba, and everyone knows what I'm talking about.
You know I throw out my Uncle O'Grimacy tattoo, and everyone knows
love
where
that.
I'm at.
Love that.
All right.
Mario Wonder.
Let's move along.
Shout out to that awful AI image of the dude smoking in an AI McDonald's.
Jesus.
What?
You know the one.
Oh, is it the peak male specimen of 1985?
Yep.
That
right.
Image?
Yep. Yeah. He
looks
got
like Magnum
sleeves,
T.A.,
but no
the
shirt.
Wrestler. Yeah.
Yeah.
Eating at like McDougal's.
Mm-hmm. McDougal's.
Let's move along to
number three.
Why did you record someone leaving their car blinker on?
I thought for the first little bit, I was like, what percussion is this? And then I was like, oh, those are ladder sounds.
Yeah, hands on rungs. In which game?
Metal Gear Solid 3.
Snake Eater.
Snake Eater. And if you don't want to be spoiled on this particular moment, scoot ahead to 43 minutes, 21 seconds. But Snake Eater, this particular moment, it follows up one of the most memorable moments in the game, the fight with this guy.
I beg of you, grant me the strength to take this final prey.
I hate that fight.
Let me linger in this world just a little longer. I have already slept enough for one lifetime. Enough for an eternity.
I beg of you, purchase this McDonald's Play Place piece.
Very,
you have
very
to spot
old
a
man.
Sniper. It's the old man sniper guy.
Yeah, the end.
Yeah, that's the end.
The end.
This is the end.
The first time you see him, he's being wheeled around in a wheelchair.
I learned recently. I did not know this. So you can actually kill the end when you first see him in that wheelchair early in the game, and the fight just won't happen at all. I knew about the like save the game, wait a week, come back, and he's dead of natural causes. Yep. Skip.
Oh, that's fun.
And I recently learned you can put in the Konami code and it shows you where he is.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah, you go to the map screen, do the Konami code, and it pings him.
Nice.
I think that's it. The Konami code does something that helps you with that.
But then you get that
ladder climb.
In that first scene,
when you see he's like way in the background being wheeled away, if you snipe him there, if you can pull that off, You skip the whole thing entirely. I didn't know that.
That's amazing. Well, it's just like in, what is that, Resident Evil 4? If you snipe the church bell, you'll make the town people go away, mm-hmm. so you don't have to do the town fight.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
That's, we call that the coward's way out, mm-hmm. but, you know.
So there is something, well, I mean, you can't do it in your first playthrough, right? Because you don't have the sniper rifle yet. But correct. Anyhow, there's something about this particular song in this game that has always bothered me, and I want to see if you guys feel the same. She goes off pitch, like at one point where she gets really, really high, and I
when she belts out,
yeah, Snake when she's Eater. Trying to belt it out, she's at least half a note flat, and it has always bothered me. And I'm like, I mean, A for effort, but Jesus Christ, like you can fix that in post in a recording studio. What are you doing?
Is this the part you're talking about?
It's around that bit.
I think it's later when the whole
orchestra
is
in. It's a little bit later. Yeah. It's when she's really belting it out.
I know the one you're talking about. It's,
so it's not like, just me, right? Like, I hear it.
I know the moment you're talking about. Hold on, I feel you.
Hold on. I've never played past the 9-hour intro of this game.
Mm-hmm. you're still fucking around with camouflage.
I'm still learning about Godzilla over my intercom.
Wearing crocodile hats.
Yeah. Yeah, I have never. I'm waiting till Delta, I guess. But like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
So don't believe the hype. So you don't need to play this game. Yeah. Don't believe.
So let's set up this moment a little better then. So yes, you have this boss fight with the end, and then you enter a tunnel going deep into a mountain, and then you have to climb this really fucking long ladder, and as you're climbing it, maybe. About 10, 15 seconds in, you start to hear that initial strain of the "What a Thrill." And it's the Metal Gear Solid 3 theme song, but an a cappella version that just sort of plays echoing and windy as you're ascending this seemingly endless ladder. And then you get to the top and you infiltrate the mountain base.
The ladder is the length of the song. It's very... Yeah. Deliberate.
Yeah.
And in this case, an original song. You know, I was talking about how Kojima's really good at picking this stuff out. In this case, it's an original song for the game. So, like, you know, even cooler.
Yeah, I was going to say, it'll show up in Delta.
But the hilarious part about that is, like, he didn't need to make the ladder that long. You could have just made Snake climb slower, and so it would have covered less distance. But like,
no,
the fact
instead
that Snake has to go is like, oh, well, that's a 200 story ladder.
I'm
going to
ask a lot of dumb questions
it's,
here.
It's the world's greatest OSHA violation. This moment,
he's basically climbing the Tower of Babel, trying to reach God.
What do you think came first, the long ladder, the need to hear the song? How far in the game is it?
It's toward the middle end, right? Probably start of the
second, getting into the last act.
Yeah. Is there any design reason why a ladder should ever be that tall, other than to hear this song?
Well, sure. If Sam Bridges needs to, lay it down across the river or something.
I mean, if you didn't want them to hear the song, you could have just put an elevator in the game.
That's true.
Where music never plays.
But they'd be watching an elevator. This is a stealth mission. You need to infiltrate with the ladder that no one fucking uses. Because why would they?
Now that I think about that, what would have been funnier? Just escalator. Mm-hmm. Just various shots of Snake slowly going up on an escalator. Yeah. Universal Studios, like the world's longest escalator. Like, geez, escalator. You can see that from the freeway, that escalator.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know what must exist? Someone must have modded in other songs of the same length into that moment, right?
Oh, like, sure.
A cappella versions, too.
Like, just tap, tap, tap. Like,
all that she wants.
Yeah, you just find the same BPM song, and you just throw any song in there, right?
I'm just imagining just a couple rungs up, and just out of nowhere, so here I am, holding on to what I can.
Very soft.
Once there was this kid who...
There you go.
Stop advertising them to me. I'm not going to see them.
They're still playing?
Yes.
I watched one Shane Gillis clip online, and now I get ads for his tickets like every other day.
Yeah, man.
It's like,
he is rich with YouTube content and weird fans.
Wow. It's just, he was on SNL. I had to see the clips.
Yeah, I know. I'm same thing happened to me. Just wanted to see some SNL clips. I don't care what his opinions on the Civil War were.
And to be honest, right, for a guy who was quote unquote canceled, he stays pretty busy.
Pretty prominent.
He's doing just fine.
he does. Yeah. So what I'm hearing is I'm going to mod in his monologue to be playing as you climb
the
ladder.
Do it. If you like hearing the R word a lot, go right ahead. Be our guest.
Jesus. We'll be our guest.
I know which one you mean.
This is a haunting and wonderful moment.
Well, yeah.
You need to pay it a certain amount of respect, the other R word.
Does it have like a RDR moment where like it might stop if you were to fall or
get I don't think you can really fall. You can just sort of stop on the ladder, I think, but like
Yeah. I want to say it'll just like repeat an instrumental at the end if you're not out yet.
Mm. Oh really?
I don't
So like it does stop when you get off the ladder.
There are no instruments. It's just the a cappella.
So, doesn't an orchestra kick in at some point, or am I just thinking of the theme?
I think you're thinking of the theme, because I had that same expectation, and then I watched it, and it's like, oh, yeah, I guess it's just
a cappella
the whole way through.
It's meant to be haunting, for sure.
Call it the Acapandella effect.
Well, it's one of those things, like, is this playing over the soundtrack? Is this something, like, Snake is imagining as he's climbing?
Is he humming his own theme song?
Yeah, exactly.
There's just a really, like, a woman in a shower at the top of the ladder, just singing in the shower.
is it Snake!
is it when Peter Griffin was sneaking around going da, 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 da,
like yeah exactly
just Snake humming to himself as he's going up the ladder.
Testing the acoustics of this tunnel.
Oh man, but it is yeah. I mean, it's a great moment. It I mean, at this point, it's pretty well known.
Yeah,
I'd be surprised if it kind of got anybody. But I know for me, this was actually MGS3 is the first one I played to completion, so it's a memorable game for me for those reasons. But then also, yeah, like I remember I had that moment of like I was actually it was the 3DS port of the game that I played, which I borrowed from the Games Radar library
when
I was interning out there. Yeah, and I'm sitting alone in this apartment one night, and then just, you know, you can hear just a little 3DS sound coming out of my room. What a thrill.
Wow.
Sitting, yeah, and like, you know, just made the whole thing a little extra memorable, you
know? The last time I picked it up was the Vita, so maybe it's been a minute.
Yeah.
It's in my opinion, the best of the mainline MGS.
I did have a...
That's just me.
Rare moment of like, I have no idea where my Vita is, and I think I dropped like... $1,000 in game purchases that don't work anywhere else.
Wow.
I mean, if you count all the...
A lot of Vib ribbon, huh?
Yeah, gotta get you a PlayStation TV.
If you count the PS Plus stuff, I probably have like a grand worth of shit in there, and some games I worked on.
If he wants a PS TV, that's another $1,000 at this point. That thing is rare.
Remember when it was like super easy to get everywhere for like...
$20?
Yeah, $20, and then like people found out about it and like, oh shit, this is amazing.
Like, well, they stopped making them. There was a run on them when they. It's just like right, Steam had the same thing. They had the, like.
Yeah. You know what else is amazing?
Yeah. Number two.
What the hell?
Yes. From what I gathered, you grew up nice and sheltered with Mama's pretty stories and your own made up fury. And Mama gave me a magic clicker. Well, yes, I think it's true and fair to say.
Oh, this.
What is this?
Alan Wake 2. That's Alan Wake 2. You knew this one. You knew this had to be on here.
Yeah, I feel like this can't really be a spoiler anymore because it got played at the Game Awards.
I was there.
Yeah.
I was like, I didn't sign up to go see musical theater. I want out of here. Right
yes,
which,
did.
Which, honestly, performing it in person at the Game Awards makes it like even another meta layer deeper.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, because for folks that are unaware of like how this happens, and I don't remember the name of the chapter.
Still, if you do want to skip it, skip ahead to 54 minutes and 45 seconds.
You shouldn't, because to me, it was a thing like I liked Alan Wake 1.
No, I mean, if you want to skip us talking about it.
I know what you meant, but I'm saying like this is. I was not fully on board with the game in multiple ways until this section of the game.
Until show tunes. Yeah. You say it's, show tunes, Chris comes
It's right. different from show tunes because, like, kind of the way they do it is masterful because they're just, if you don't know anything about Alan Wake, there's this whole video of this guy who looks like your game character, and now you're walking among one another as a music video starring you and a real metal band are projected, and they even make sure to, like, it triggers, like, 16 times. Like, if you fuck around and hang back, like, mm-hmm. there's something that'll keep going, and then the next moment of the song will kick in. Yeah. But more than anything, the first Alan Wake game made me real precious with my ammo, and I think that level, I don't want to cast what I think the developer's intentions were, was to, like, don't be precious with your ammo. We'll give you as much ammo as you need. Mm. And whenever I would run out, there'd be exactly as much as I needed for the next section. And I played Alan Wake a little easier after that. I did not have to be precious with things on the normal level. Because, and it became, like, a fun shoot. It's like the one level where it becomes a fun shooter, because it's not that ever. And but it teaches you the mechanics and how to get good with some of the firing. In the midst of this hilarious song, with your character doing the fucking corniest things of all time, he is reenacting every journey video in front of your face throughout the entirety of this level. It is so
cool. What's the name of the band?
The Old Gods of Asgard.
Old Gods of Asgard.
Yeah. Who have this?
Are they the same band from the other thing that I was combining?
Yes, they are the same band. Yes. Well, they're the same band from the first Alan Wake, and they're the same band from Control, and their song plays through the amazing Ashtray Maze segment.
Yes. So good.
That sequence is really good.
Isn't that the coolest thing about it?
Well, that one is like toward the end of the game, so it's really unexpected when it hits you. Like, by the time you can solve the Ashtray Maze, it's really late in the game, and so the game hasn't thrown anything like that at you up to that point.
But I deeply admire that the songs are not cool. They are authentically shitty.
They're very cheap.
But in an authentic way, though.
Right, they're sincere.
Yeah,
they're sincere.
Yeah, that could have been a real early 90s hair metal.
Or a Finnish band today.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, sure. Oh, shit. You've offended all four Finnish listeners. Look out.
I wish we had four Finnish
Chris,
listeners.
What you said on the podcast has me very upset.
I am no longer sending him fish. But it just like
I'm going to remove the Chris rune from my rune wall.
But it's like this game gets so many Twin Peaks comparisons, and my favorite part about Twin Peaks is when it's funny. And I don't know that David Lynch, how intentionally funny he is.
It's one of those things. It's like, wait, are you being intentionally funny, or are you just kind of strange?
It's true.
I think this is a lot of intentionally funny stuff and well executed.
Yeah. And stuff that doesn't bother to explain itself, much like Lynch. Like, I always think of one of the best things is someone asked him, and I don't remember what it's in what movie specifically. Someone asked him a question, like, can you explain whatever?
No.
That's his entire answer. No.
That's why I can't tell if he's intentionally funny or not. Is like, he's one of those dudes, you're like, oh, he must be intentional. And then you hear him talk and the way he dresses, and you go, maybe he's not in on the joke. Like, maybe that's
his character in Twin Peaks is at a loss of hearing. No, he really yells like that. He really does.
And so more to the point of like this list being, surprising musical moments, what I think is really fascinating to me is that so Alan Wake 1 also has a musical moment. There's the whole bit where you're like defending the brother's farm their like soundstage. So you're playing another concert. You got it's the same kind of deal. Pyro is going off, whatever. So that all happens.
Thought you were gonna say the Bowie songs they removed.
No, it's another Old Gods song, I believe. So you have that moment. Then in Control, you have the Ashtray Maze, which again, like, one of the standout moments of that game for sure. So even though we've had 1-2 and we're kind of expecting something, by rule of thirds, right? We're kind of rule of threes. We're kind of expecting something. It still manages to be so surprising and so delightful that we're hit with this in, I think it's Alan's second chapter that it happens.
And that it like sustains itself for a really long time. And I'm like,
for an entire level.
I don't want this to end at all. It's like 16 times longer than the Piranha level.
Yeah. And from a tech perspective, too, like you were saying, Chris, like, if you linger behind and don't go to a section yet, they will hold on an instrumental. They'll hold on a bridge. They'll hold on
until you
go into the next room, and then they will continue to the next actual part of the song.
The projections of them on the walls start to get impatient. Like they'll, yes. they'll be like, you know, swinging yeah. their arms around and like pointing like up here, go up the staircase.
Those, yeah. They are, like, they are your their Ninja watch, Turtles yeah. pointing fingers. Like mm-hmm. you need to come this way. Quit fucking around. There's yeah. no ammo back there. We got your ammo. Relax.
Yeah. Yeah. And another thing too, to me, this is like such, again, like what makes it surprising is the whole game, right? All of Alan Wake 2 uses live action to such a cool way, right? Like insane. You've got like the live action is like the ghostly figures in the game world. Like it's done in such an incredible way. And yet, even though, again, we're used to seeing that sort of stuff by this point, this is still another level of like, you know, live action, just weirdness where you're like somehow. And all I've seen so far in this game, I still didn't expect to see this.
I genuinely you know? Think you wouldn't have been able, you couldn't have done this with this kind of clarity and fidelity on the last generation. It's one of the few things I can honestly say that about, because there's a couple moments where they're projecting a video and like, yeah, I can't tell the difference between a real person and if this yeah. is a CG, mm-hmm. I really can't. Yeah. Good job.
I don't know when I'd get another chance to say it, so I'll say it now on the same lines of Alan Wake 2. The facial animation on Amazing. Rose, the micro expressions that they animated in are honestly the best facial animation I've ever seen
actually,
in a video game.
Matt and I are like, we're just frustrated because like it is always just a little bit off in the sync that yeah. makes it feel like sure. 1,000 times more foreign. Mm.
Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah, because I'm playing through like TV speakers, not even a sound yeah. system. So I'm like, okay, so it's not my setup. It's
yeah, yeah. What, going on here. Why? Patch this, please. But, you know, you can fix that kind of stuff. That, yeah.
I'm convinced Remedy is such a strange game developer. Like, half the studio doesn't want to make games. They want to make kind of bullshit weird TV shows and music videos, and then the other half wants to make video games. And what's great is when they all get together, they make games kind of unlike any other studio out there right now.
They're the Icelandic Kojima.
Exactly. That's why they yeah. get along so well with Kojima.
It's true. It's true.
There's some crossover there. Kojima did some stuff for Control.
Did you see
Hideo Reykjavik?
I think they fixed it, but like three versions of Control hit Game Pass this weekend.
Oh, really?
Three. Yes.
And I'm more like out of control, am I right?
They got rid of one of them, but like why? I hope you're not paying extra for the regular and Ultimate Edition and the Xbox One and Xbox Series X Edition Ultimate Edition. Why are there three versions here?
Well, you got to get that AEW expansion. Oh, wait, AWE, sorry. AWE. Alan Wake expansion.
Sure.
That's what it was called. It was called AWE expansion.
That is literally what it is, yeah.
I can feel the audience tensing up, so let's play the chorus and get it over with.
Love it.
It's not terrible.
No, like, no, it's not terrible. I'm saying it's terrible in authentic ways, like the Peacemaker intro song. That is a new band. That is on the Peacemaker intro. Wigwam, we mentioned them last weekend. Yeah. And they are authentic.
They're a new band with that name?
Yeah. Australia, what are you going to do?
All right.
Are they Australian?
Something like that, Wigwam? Yeah. They ain't from here. I made sure of it.
I thought they were Scandinavian somewhere, but
is it not the same?
Yeah,
no.
Scandinavia, weird. Australia, exactly the same.
Isolated white prison, who talk with an accent. Isolated prison territories for white people.
It's like we just confused Iceland with Finland.
Scandinavia was not a prison colony. What are you talking about?
I did not confuse any of these places. That's I said it because I thought it was funnier.
Georgia
than saying
and Australia. Georgia and Australia are closest to each other in that regard.
Yes, I and said it because it was funnier. But go ahead, corrections are more funny.
They
yeah,
are.
Let's do that.
Yes. The highest form of humor is correction.
It really is.
Everybody knows. I'm actually, it really yeah. is.
Well, actually, with Don Lemon. It's great.
Yeah, that's why, you know, Twitter has a special rose icon that you click that's on.
Neil deGrasse
Tyson
is beloved. Let's talk about my favorite movie. Well, yeah. That movie could never happen in a billion light years.
A light year is a measurement of distance, Neil.
You meant fathoms. Couldn't happen a million fathoms.
Couldn't happen in a million parsecs. Anyway, let's move along to
number one.
Obvious number one is obvious.
I don't know what it is yet. Oh, I do.
Yeah, you do.
Come on.
Yeah.
Step in front of a runaway train. Just to feel alive again.
This kind of invented the... Well, maybe it... I don't know if it invented, it definitely popularized the idea of, like, you're wandering around exploring, you trigger some event, and all of a sudden the soundtrack changes to this song with lyrics. That
it's insane. It feels, I'm always reminded of the middle of Django Unchained, where, like, I'd like to acquire your services, and then I'll teach you to be a bounty hunter. And there's just this wonderful montage of them teaching Django to be a bounty hunter, and it separates the half of the movie. That's what this does. It separates like 50% of the game. It like starts over with a new episode. Mm. And I'll never, we were all like obsessed with this moment. And it was one of the GRUK guys. Was
Riding
towel?
To Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Riding to Mexico and Red Dead Redemption 2. If you get off your horse, the song will stop and never come back.
Yeah, I did the same thing and made that same mistake. It's like, oh, you faded away. It's gone. Oh, no. Yeah.
Oh, I was having so much fun cinematographing, like, my own
intro sequence. I totally screwed it up. So, this has a connection back to Garden State.
Yeah. By the way, if you don't want to hear about Red Dead for some reason, skip ahead to 1 hour, 8 minutes, 18 seconds.
Oh, whatever. Get out of here.
So bear with me for the random connection back to Garden State. So Garden State featured a band on the soundtrack called 07. There's a song, In the Waiting Line. I saw 07 at the Hollywood Bowl. Guess who opened for 07? This is well before Red Dead had come out. An artist by the name of Jose Gonzalez, who sings that song.
How the fuck did 07 play the Hollywood Bowl? What was this? The SSX music tournament? What? Who is 07?
They're like a cool artsy band. But anyway, and they had Sia. Sia sang with them. Like way before Sia was famous.
I know
Sia.
Oh, wow.
Way. Yeah. But so I saw Jose Gonzalez before I knew him from this game. And so when it kicked in for me, I'm like, that sounds so familiar. I know that artist. I know who that is. Because I had been like into his records from seeing him open for 07. But like this is like the definitive moment from that game. Like when a lot of people, I think of Red Dead 1, they think of the Jose Gonzalez song.
Yeah,
like,
it's because it might be one of the few shared experiences we all have with that game. Because you didn't have to sit around for most of the conversations.
I was going to say, it's interesting you were mentioning...
Yeah.
It's interesting you were mentioning, you know, you were talking about GTA and Rockstar stuff earlier, because then this is all I was thinking about was, like, this musical moment triggering, right? Yep. Because it's so well paired with that idea of, like, you know, crossing into Mexico, that's, like, the second act break of the game. That is when we're entering, you know, for our characters, unfamiliar territory, that sort of thing. And so it's significant enough crossing that border. To add this on top of it just makes it that much more memorable. And one of many reasons why Red Dead Redemption... Fantastic game.
Yes.
The sequel.
I'm more with Tony than I am with Matt and Michael.
Well, here's what's crazy about this moment, though, is that game, up until this moment, tonally, this is very different from the rest of the game, because up until that moment, the game had basically been a spaghetti western, good, the bad, the ugly style. Mm-hmm. Not that they were ripping off, but they were totally channeling that vibe. So this was like a relatively modern song. You're like, whoa, this is so not like any of the rest of the game that I'm playing.
You know what, Matt?
It's anachronistic.
You might be onto something, because, like, they're more modern, sad Western, Unforgiven, Assassination of Jesse James references all occur after the first half. The shittiness of Marston's continued existence starts to set in. It's you're not just a gunslinger now. You got to look out for your fucking family, and how are you going to do it from here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
while you're
so far away, it's so far away.
Very
Which
good.
Even at the time, like, they use all the tricks they had in their tool chest, but to be like, oh yeah, this is a really far trip, and I'm like, he just crossed a river. This is barely across a map. The map wasn't that huge.
It's one of the only moments where the game makes you linger. You can skip most traversal sequences. And it kind of asks you to, like, please notice we rendered a completely different environment than the one you were just in. Take it in. this is going to be different. They really tried
this
to hammer that home.
This desert's more deserty.
Well, yeah.
It was like more cactus, more desert.
Well, it's, but it's a lot.
Wouldn't like you like to go to from the desert to El Desert?
It's a lot less populated.
Well, it was Texas. That's what would happen if you were going from Texas to Mexico or Southern California to Mexico. It's very similar climates, and then it just slight differences.
Like you've traveled. I think most of us have traveled through a country's border at this point. Like, there's no fanfare because there's such an elaborate sequence in doing it. You know that it's happening. Maybe there does need to be a jarring moment to let the player recognize you are not anywhere where people will understand what you're fucking saying. Your jurisdiction doesn't count. Your money doesn't work. I thought it was beautiful. I think a lot of us, like, did my iPod just go off? What the fuck is this? Like, there's no real, not a lot of diegetic music. Non-diegetic? I forget which one.
Non-diegetic, like, in this case.
Yeah, custom track that I loaded onto my Xbox 360 and forgot about.
An ancient thing I forgot to take out of my fucking Morrowind file.
Like, am I playing Burnout? Burnout 3 with my custom soundtracks? Let's go.
I was cleaning out my closet, and I love... My dad's always, like, hated video games, and I think I mentioned, like, he bought me more video games post-2018 than he did for the first 30 years of my life. He's like, maybe there's something to this. You got a job in the games industry. I haven't had to give you any money. And I was cleaning out my closet, and I didn't... One Christmas, he gave me... What are you up to right now? I'm just playing Red Dead Redemption. He bought me the vinyl Red Dead Redemption 2 vinyl, and I have never, like, it's been years, and I just found it the other day with the D'Angelo song, which is an equally great song, but I think there were beats they tried to copy from RDR1, so that's why I'm siding more with Tony here. There was a lot I found dissatisfying and a lot of things I thought they tried to redo that didn't do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Cuba... What a waste of time.
Oh, God, that was... Yeah, that sequence sucked.
Yes. Well, I mean, Red Redemption kind of... Like, this became its thing throughout Like, it is actually like a three-game series now, not counting Red Dead Revolver, the first one, which also, like, had a lot of really good use of, like, spaghetti western music, like, from films. It also played a different song toward the end of the game as you're entering the final act.
Now I know the only compass that I need is the one leads back to you.
Oh, he's heading home.
It's think about that, though. Like, this is like an 80-hour game.
Mm-hmm.
8 minutes. That's what you're given with music moments like this. It make it feel really special. It's still memorable to me. I love the first Red Dead unconditionally. The second one I have a lot of problems with.
Well, Undead Nightmare also did this, but it was a complete tonal shift in terms of atmosphere because you'd get shit like this.
Killer clowns.
Come on.
It's gonna have rad fucking surf rock.
I know it's surf rock, but Michael, I call it UFO music.
UFO
music.
Perfect.
No.
That is Bad Voodoo by the Creeps.
I feel like to the point of what Chris was saying, too, like, they knew they had something special with that first moment crossing over to Mexico. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, we already played you two more times and they tried to do it again within the same, generation.
Yeah, I'd be disappointed.
They knew they were doing something very special.
I'd be disappointed if they didn't do it, but, like, that first moment is one of the things most people talked about, because there's only so much shooting people in the nuts 30-year-olds can bandy about back and forth.
Yeah.
They've always been pretty good, though, about using music in big moments. Like, I go back to the intro for GTA San Andreas, right? Like, the bike scene, and very much established, like, all right, this is the setting. We're going after a South Central Los Angeles vibe in this one in the 90s, and they nailed it.
I think
so.
They make the best trailers.
I mean, Vice City.
I was about to say, and now with the GTA 6 Tom Petty.
Like,
stuff,
what a great pull with that was.
Nailed
it. A fucking B-side from a notoriously Florida musician. Like, the not popular song on his album that is all singles. You've heard every one of those songs except this one. Very cool. Very cool. Full Moon Fever. Get it for your dad. He'll love it. make it your Easter present. Unless your dad might want a Patreon subscription to Laser.
But what if your dad is like me and has the Tom Petty box set that includes all of those recordings already?
But here's the thing. You were talking about Aerosmith in the 90s. We were just going through it on 302010. Tom Petty's Greatest Hits album comes out in 94, like late 93. Every one of us had that album. It had Last Dance with Mary Jane on it. That GTA 6 song isn't on there. That's how it's not on there. It does not encompass their first 15 years as a band. Yeah, they dug deep, found something cool.
Anyway, I think it's on his Greatest Hits album. Yeah. Like, that's how most people probably heard it.
It's not on his Greatest Hits album, you worm.
I'm pretty sure it is, because I have it.
No, it's not. Love is a Long Road is not on his Greatest Hits album.
As much hate as Tony and Chris are layering onto Red Dead 2, it also did this stuff. There are a few particularly striking ones that happen toward the end of the game.
Abigail Roberts.
Always was a good thief.
That you was. Get out of here.
Yeah. The many miles we walk. The many things we learn.
That moment, like, I kind of feel like that's almost worthy of something like Drive. Like, here's a moment where he's just, like, sending off his friends and is like, I'm going to ride to a place where I'm probably... bad thing's probably going to happen to me, but I got to face this anyway. It's the right thing to do.
If you don't have it queued up to go to break, D'Angelo's Unshaken from RDR2. Like... that's the song. It is fucking excellent, and it isn't a quiet song either.
All right.
It's like practically a gospel song. It's awesome.
Well, let's go with that. But first, there is also a song you might not have heard unless you go with one very specific path in one of the game's first endings, and it sounds like this.
Which game?
In Red Dead 2.
Okay.
So, spoilers for the end of Red Dead 2. Skip ahead like 30 seconds if you don't want. No, 45 seconds if you don't want to hear it.
Please be Sir Mix-a-Lot.
I'll see you around, John Marston. Be safe. Dutch. Micah. Come and get me, you bastards. Dutch! Micah! Come and get me, you bastards!
To the top.
Over here! Ah! Ah! What are you doing? Get him!
Stop!
It starts playing a hip-hop track. That's like the only one in the game.
I'm not sure that I heard that.
What happens if you make a selfish choice?
Yeah, so that's it. Yeah, that's the bad ending.
Technically, it's
right?
The bad ending. Yeah.
The naughty ending. Mm-hmm. Where you don't have a second player. Where's my monkey?
No second player. No Diddy Kong.
I like big butts and I cannot lie! Dungaree, she's wearing a can't stop staring, Micah.
Oh my God, Becky, look at her pistol.
Jesus. All right, what was that song you said, D'Angelo? Let's go out with that.
Unshaken. Baby.
Unshaken.
Unshaken.
All right, we'll go out on that, and when we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some Rise of the Ronin, some Alone in the Dark, some news, some other stuff, so stay tuned.
Did I hear a thunder? Did I hear you break? I can't quite remember just what guided this way.
Let's get scratching.
Would you like exclusive bonus podcast commentaries and more from the LaserTime crew? Then we strongly encourage you to support this show on patreon.com/LaserTime. It supports not only this show, but all the rest of the LaserTime network. You'll get commentaries, play games with the hosts, see exclusive videos first, and receive an uncut weekly ad-free podcast bonus time. Speaking of which, here's a quick taste.
Because we both wanted to talk about this and the holidays got in the way, but... Godzilla Minus One rocked both our worlds, did it not?
Oh, dude, it's... I went into it assuming I would like it. I did not go into it
assuming it was going to probably be the best Godzilla movie ever.
You're not wrong, according to box office or critics. It is. Yeah, it's doing pretty insane right now, and we're going to dig into more of that.
Get Bonus Time, a weekly, uncensored, and commercial-free podcast every Tuesday, starting for just $5 on Patreon.com/LaserTime.
And welcome back to our second segment, where we're just going to dive right into that cornucopia of awesomeness that we like to call...
Why would you take that long with this many new releases?
I don't know. It's fun.
Why?
Where do we want to start?
MLB The Show!
I haven't even checked it. The past few years it's been on Game Pass. Is it
Are
Game
you
Pass
ready this? For some baseball? I do love, I didn't even know it existed, and I just clicked on my Game Pass earlier today. I'm like, oh yeah, Sony's big exclusive I get for nothing.
is it on Game Pass again this year?
It's in the top two things. I didn't bother to check, but if it's not a day one, it's come to Game Pass before. Was it a day one download?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the past 2 years, it's been day one on Game Pass.
Yeah, it looks to be the same because they were advertising the shit out of it. So, yeah.
All right.
This is like a cultural exchange week where exclusives from one console are appearing on the other. Hi-Fi Rush is appearing on PS5. Final Fantasy 14 is now on Xbox.
Isn't that weird? Hi-Fi Rush is such a great game when I didn't have to pay for it, and now I'm wondering if I can recommend it if you have to.
I mean, people love it, so.
I do appreciate its style, and I wish more games had style like that.
It was a very stylish game.
Yeah.
Great use of 9-inch nails.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
What?
Really?
Yeah. It's, there's two boss fights set to a 9-inch nails song.
Oh, really?
Hi-Fi Rush. Mm-hmm.
How surprising.
Confirmed, by the way, MLB The Show is all over Xbox.com as, like, get this if you're a Game Pass subscriber!
I hope the 9-inch nails song is the Johnny Cash cover, which I say just to enrage people.
Yeah.
One is The Perfect Drug, I want to say.
That's one of my favorites. And David Lynch, baby, made that song possible.
And I don't remember what the other one is, but yeah, there's two that are good.
All right.
Well, Alone in the Dark, again, I played a bit of that. It stars David Harbour, which is apparently hilarious to Chris.
Oh, star of Gran Turismo, the movie,
yes,
David Harbour?
The very same. He plays
I love
Private
how much
Detective
you love Edward Alone in the Harbour. Dark, and you do Harbour. Not see, you, Michael really doesn't see its descent into like...
Oh, I do.
No, that's Amnesia.
I'm well aware of the series' ups and downs. I've played all those fucking games.
Michael is always interested in Alone in the Dark game. Like, honey, come on.
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell you, though, Michael, I'm with you. Because I'm also... the only Alone in the Dark I played is actually the original. Mm-hmm. I actually covered it like for like a Halloween thing on Framework once. Go watch it. It inspired a lot of the survival horror you know and love today.
Yes. Wow. Thanks, Owen.
I wanted this new remake to be good. Like, I wanted it to be good.
Yeah. The
but I just knew it wouldn't be.
The reviews are somewhere around the 65 mark. Ooh. 65 out of 100. Honestly, like, I need this to be like a 7 and I'll be happy with it. Like, this is it seems like a solid AA game. What I've played so far is kind of fun, although what I've played so far has mostly been wandering around in empty, slightly creepy rooms, picking up notes that play with narration and random items and keys and things.
Did
like
you
that.
Walk into those rooms pelvis first with a femi walk?
Sure.
That's the Alone in the Dark I remember.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Might be Alone in the Dark 3 no, reference.
Actually,
let's
talk
three.
Really quickly. How many, let's be honest, how many good Alone in the Dark games have there been?
Oh, two. None, but the first one is important.
Yeah. And two. The PS3 one is underrated, honestly.
Oh, right, because that was like a total refresh in the 360 one.
Yeah, it added a little bit of content, and then it made like a few very small fixes that's like, you completely fixed the terrible inventory system. I think the biggest one was like, batteries for your flashlight no longer take up inventory space, and it's just like, now it's perfect. But not perfect, but much more playable. But yeah, this one
said perfect.
Now it's playable.
The takebacks.
It does the thing that the first game did, where you get to play as two characters, Edward Carnby or I'm blanking on her name, but the
niece of the person.
The
heir to the home.
Right. That's the thing. It's no longer a family home. Now it's a convalescent home for mentally ill people. So it's like a mental hospital called Dersetto, I'm playing as her, and it starts out like she's hired Carnby to accompany her because she's afraid of what, like, she thinks the staff is hiding something. She just wants a protector along, and the first thing they do is like they come to a door and like, oh, nobody's home. How can we get in? And you're clearly supposed to be playing Carnby at this point, because what the heroine does is she then goes down to the like finds another door that's slightly ajar and says like, wait here by the front door, I'll find a way to let you in, and like goes through all this potentially dangerous area to try and find her way to the front door to let the detective in who she's hired. Also, she's like, oh, did you bring a gun? And he's like, yeah, I don't think I'll need it, though. She's also carrying a gun right from the bat. And so it's like, why did you hire this guy again? Makes less and less sense.
So is it like a two-hander story in that case? It's like interwoven with both of them the whole time, and you're just playing as one of the other? Because like it was identical. It was just a skin.
Yeah, you pick. I get the sense it's more or less identical, probably with some variations. It didn't make it very clear early on. There's all these collectibles called lanyaps throughout, which is, you know, it's...
Oh, lanyaps?
Lanyaps! Yeah, it's a you know, French New Orleans term for, like,
I learned
something
that
extra.
Word. Yeah, I learned that word from SNL.
Yes,
really?
The liberal lanyap.
It's one of my favorite opening... The liberal lanyap. Here he goes... How y'all doing? Liberal land, yeah.
It was Beck Bennett, right?
Yes. It was a hyper leftist, commie centric,
right,
Louisiana talk show.
It was so good.
Emily Hartwood is the character I'm thinking of. I kept wanting to call her.
It was Emily.
Eileen Cedric, who's the other character from the new Nightmare and the terrible movie.
Yeah. But played by Jodie Comer.
Yes.
Who is, what has she been in? The Duel? Right? Oh, is that what that movie is?
The classic Steven Spielberg movie.
The most recent movie written by Ben Affleck and Matt Damon.
Yes.
She was
where Ben Affleck's haircut could either be from 1500s French, like France, or Florida today.
Yeah.
The Last Duel. That was it. Yeah. She's in that. And then, a couple other things. She has that like Victorian era look to her, which is not when Alone in the Dark is set. That's just what she looks like. And then David Harbour as Edward Carnby is good casting. Yeah. Like, I think that's good casting on both sides.
So the lanyaps, it makes it clear very early on, like, there are some that can only be found in one playthrough or the other. So if you want to collect them all, you have to play as both characters.
Lisa, here's my lanyard, Emily.
Also, like, most of the complaints that I've heard about it center around her and David Harbour. That, like, yeah, they give roughly the performance that you'd expect from a screen actor who's doing a voice role in a video game.
Oh, or people who have never met.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if you told me this or it was something I read. It's that weird thing about being first. Like, you know, Marvel movies are king, but DC was first. Alone in the Dark inspired so many other games, but this Alone in the Dark game is, I just read somewhere, inspired so much by Resident Evil and the worst Silent Hills.
All right. I have heard it referred, you know, compared to the lesser Silent Hills. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. I enjoyed those. So
you did. You've always been a Silent Hill fan.
Yeah. I love dumb survival horror. So I'm on board with this. But why would I be? Because there's some real quality coming out at the end of this week. Dragon's
Dogma
2.
Can I ask real quick, Michael, before we move on? Are there still jellyfish monsters in bathtubs?
There may be. I haven't found any yet. I have not found a single monster. It was really weird, though, because, like, creeping through this empty mental hospital, it's like, there's literally no one here. I rang the bell at the desk. There's nobody came. There's no staff. And then, like, you go to the front door, you unlock it, and then suddenly triggers a cutscene where, like, a guy walks in right behind you and, like, oh, don't close the door. Oh, you closed it. Oh, wow. And then, like, a nurse walks in, like, oh, what are you doing? Go find that little girl. And then the little girl shows up and is like, where were you people, like, 2 seconds ago?
Yeah. I'm curious how much of the first it'll follow, because, like, for as, like, janky as it is to play the original, it is a very cool lead-up and reveal when you're in this mansion the whole time, and then for the, you know, and spoilers for a game from 1989? 80? I don't remember when it came out now.
No,
in the 90s. Like, 91, I think. 92.
Maybe 91. Yeah, maybe 91. 92, something like that. Yeah, so spoilers for that. But, like, you know, the last act when it's like, oh, there's also, like, a Cthulhu earthworm cult kind of under this mansion. Like, that is a cool reveal. Well,
there's already, like, it's pretty clear. Again, if you're a fan of the series, there are references to things that happen in multiple games. It's clearly, it's more than just a remake of the first game. It's kind of a, let's remake elements of the whole series.
Mm.
And there are also little Lovecraft references sprinkled throughout the notes that I found so far. Mm. So, you know, something about a hornless goat with a thousand young.
Ooh, another strike against it. Lovecraft references.
That was actually my senior superlative.
Senior superlative. All right.
Next game.
Yeah, next. There's a bunch of big stuff coming out at the end of the week. Let's talk first about Princess Peach Showtime, because we played the demo. I mean this in the nicest way. This seems to be a game aimed squarely at little girls. I'm not saying, like, oh, it's a game for little girls. It's clearly for kids. And it's very clearly targeted.
I played it last week, and we didn't want to talk about it. And I just texted you.
Because it wasn't out last week.
It was out last week.
No, it wasn't.
I played it, I played it 2 weeks ago.
The demo was out.
The game is out. Yes, I played the demo last week. And, like, how was it? And, like, Gerber shit.
Well, it's like,
I've never seen something Nintendo made that's so youth-focused. It is, like, almost preschool level.
Outside of Kirby? Or the
It's from the people who have made Epic Yarn and Woolly World, which
explains it.
Are easy games until they get really fucking hard.
I wanted to ask. It's funny you say that, Matt, because I've yet to play the demo. I am interested because it's, you know, a big name title from Nintendo, but like, how much like a Kirby game is this?
Because,
like, from trailer one, when it's like, here she is in different costumes doing different things. Yeah. I'm like, is that not just Kirby's gimmick? Because, hey, Kirby games suck. They're very boring platformers.
Nothing.
I'd love for any other game.
You see what he did there? Kirby and suck.
But I'd love for literally any other Nintendo game to take the power copying thing and use it. Because, like, a Kirby iconic character,
the last 3D Kirby game did not suck. That game fucking rules.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's okay.
The 2Ds, like, I won't rant about Kirby, but it's just so boring.
So,
but continue.
So what the setup is that Princess Peach and the Toads go to a theater where, like, they have multiple plays running at once, apparently,
new Toads.
Yeah, they're things like, the Toads are called the Feets, and they look like...
Oh, I did hear about this.
They
I
look
heard
like
the feet thing.
Wiggler heads. With little bodies. And they're, like, the majority of the creatures that you'll encounter and have to rescue. But the plays that are running in this theater have just, like, very generic names. Like, oh, this is our sword fighter play. We'll be opening it later. And, you know, of course, the games, or the levels are wandering around on these very long stages, literal stages, and demonic creatures have taken over, and you get a ribbon that can bring things to life on stage, and eventually you will get a costume that is, like, tied to that stage. In the first stage, it is the sword fighter costume, so it's like a musketeer outfit. The second stage is all about making pastries and cakes, so you get a pâtissier uniform.
Do you get to keep the powers moving forward from that stage where you catch them? So, like,
no.
So you don't get to be the musketeer in future stages. Just that one stage.
Now, because the demo is all I've played, and it only has those first two levels. they may have something later on where you can unlock those powers, or that the powers come back. But yeah, for the time being, it's just tied to that particular stage.
I still maintain it lacks a noticeable layer of Nintendo polish that usually goes into first-party products. And camera angles, like, that's weird. Nintendo usually is great with these little flourishes and these little animatics, and it's not. And it surprised me, because the trailer made it look like, yeah, fucking a badass Princess Peach game. It is a game for very little kids. Very little kids. And so when Michael and I say...
I'm pretty sure one of my Nintendo Switch Online vouchers was redeemed for that.
Yeah, mine was too. That's how I found out that you can't return... You can't get a refund on a pre-order less than 7 days from release, which is...
Correct. Yeah, they send you like... They send you an email that's like, this is about to be redeemed. This is your chance to change it.
You're locked in.
What kind of maroons are you pre-ordering a digital game more than 7 days from release?
Because when you use the vouchers, you save money.
Yeah, you save $10.
I recommend using the vouchers. I use them the day before they come out.
Well, I thought, like, this is something I want to play. It's a Princess Peach game.
And I'm not shitting on it, because, like, I love the idea. I've met numerous little girls now who love the Mario series, and, like, why aren't there more games with Peach? And like, yeah, it's fucked up. There's a pretty good one from 05, and that's the last one, and it was decent, and it's never been re-released, and it should happen. But, you know, she is kind of like playable in every 2D Mario series too. So
what we really need is a Daisy and Toadette game.
Sure,
that would be the fun one.
Yeah,
it was called Captain Toad. A Toadette version.
Now,
you know, that started as a Zelda game, by the way.
Did it?
No.
It did, and that's all I'm going to say about that, because eventually I kind of want to do a video about it.
All right.
But it's true.
No, well, Captain Toad, if you don't remember, is, once again, half Gerber shit, real baby stuff. And then you play as Toadette, and those levels are taxing and hard and strain your brain.
Oh, no!
So I'm kind of hoping that Princess Peach Showtime is the same, where it's just like, no, I've just played the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot more game.
There might be more, but, like, again, like, just from the animation, like, this is, what the hell is this?
So it's
showtime, baby.
I'll play it this weekend, and I'll report back next week if it's...
I hate to say it, but, like, that explains why it came out when it did, right? Like, really? So, like, if you're Nintendo, you ship the big guns around holiday, because you're gift-giving, you know, games you want parents to buy for their kids, and, like, do we have visibility on Nintendo's holiday slate this year yet? I saw Luigi's Mansion 2 got a date. I saw that...
But I think it's June. Pretty,
Thousand Year Door got a date.
It's pretty empty for most of the year. We assume listings are being held back for Switch 2, you know?
This seems so typical of Nintendo, all these releases, in my opinion, of, like, let's get these out now, because we... have some real heavy hitters we want to get out during the holiday season.
Like I was telling you guys a little while ago when I was playing it, it's like, yeah, it's not that I'm going to say this game isn't for me. It's that it's not for me. Like, it wasn't made for me. So
No. The swashbuckling, like, oh, this is real light. And the cake stuff is like, ooh, this is like sub Cooking Mama level of like very limited interactivity.
Unlosable button mashy mini games. Yeah.
I meant that as a compliment to Cooking Mama, by the way.
All right. Of course. And Dragon's Dogma 2, huge game. We'll talk about it more next week. I think all you really need to know about it is that clip that's been going around. Two or three people have sent it to me today. Somebody saying, like, when Dragon's Dogma 2 is my game of the year, I want you to understand it was because of this. And there's a sequence where...
The bridge troll? Or whatever?
There's a big ogre on the other side of a chasm, and it slips and falls and catches itself on the near side. And so it's just, like, acting as a monster bridge, and the player crosses over it, and with their pawns, they go after its hands and feet until it falls into the pit.
So, as someone who doesn't like the series at all, but spent some time... with the game intimately, like, the first game did have those dynamic moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wildly few of the dynamic moments. And, like, that, like, that's why Dark Arisen existed, because, like, it was such a sparsely populated game that did cool stuff way less than can sustain its runtime. And I do think this is one of the series that two can knock your fucking socks off, because that's what it needed. It shouldn't have taken this long, yeah. But
it has been interesting to watch it kind of grow from, like, you know, when it came out, it was this like 7 out of 10 game that nobody cared about. And it's like, well, why do we want to play this when Skyrim exists? And then
because right. it was a barren landscape that clearly they had wanted to do things, mm-hmm. but those things were expensive and hard and just left it out.
Yeah, and eventually
and that little game that nobody liked.
And Dark Arisen happened, the Switch version happened, and it got an audience that in like recent years has become like a huge cult audience. And now Dragon's Dogma 2 comes out and it's like one of the most anticipated games of the year.
I think that game was looking a little ahead and its eyes were bigger than its stomach or whatever. Its scope was bigger than its resources. So hopefully that has kind of finally met that with two.
Reviews would say that, yes, like they nail it on this one. Yeah. Like it's getting nice.
I've seen
tens. Yeah. Yeah.
And finally, Rise of the Ronin, which, Tony, you've been playing.
That's why I'm here. Yeah, I've been, as I said before in the intro of the show, I've been... doing some coverage of it for IGN, actually. So yeah, if you're picking up Rise of the Ronin and you need a couple, you know, tips and tricks, etc., and you go and look up their guides, you'll hear my voice on a number of those, because I've been playing the game. I am really enjoying it. I'm having a really good time. This is from Team Ninja, so it's people that made Neo.
Oh damn!
Long Fallen Dynasty,
DMC, Enslaved.
No, that's Ninja Theory.
Theory. Oh, these are that's even better though.
You mentioned the Ninja Gaiden Neo people.
Ninja Gaiden,
Ninja Gaiden.
Not Yaiba.
The Final Fantasy Origin.
Heavenly Sword, wasn't that the?
That's Ninja Theory.
That's Ninja Theory.
We're getting our ninjas confused.
It's way too easy to mix them up. Those are such similar names. So, really, all you need to think about is Neo here, because I think, they released several of the quote-unquote Soulsborne-like games similar to that. But honestly, like, when they... I'm not going to say, like, they nailed it in one, because they've made improvements since, but, like, Neo is like, such a standout among those, because it, from the first game, it made a big deal about, like, we've got different combat stances and all this different, like, it was much more intricate combat, even than what Dark Souls was.
Like,
Dark
Souls was obviously... Overly complex, though. Like, the stances shit was just like, I'm not learning that.
Sure. And so, I want to say, to that point, this is... the best version of something like that. It is the simplest and most understandable version of something like that. When you're in combat, you press R1 and you get these little indicators in the bottom right, and it's like whatever sort of weapons, fighting styles you have equipped at the time. And it'll just tell you right there. If it's a blue arrow pointing up, it means on the rock, paper, scissors, what you have is better. Flick your stick over to that and then just keep attacking. And you don't actually have to worry about... You don't have to worry about... the attacks themselves. All you got to worry about is, do I have the right thing highlighted so when I'm attacking, it's going to work on this guy?
I see.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, makes sense.
And it's a way simpler, like, rock, paper, scissors type. Now, the big thing, though, is that from Neo through Wolong, all of those games were mission-based.
Yes.
They were stage by stage. This now is open world. It is the first time they're going in that direction.
Did they succeed?
I believe they succeeded. I'm not going to say it's like a runaway, like, Elden Ring...
It's getting compared to Elden
Ring
a lot, which doesn't feel fair.
It does. It should. It's not fair. It's not fair to compare it to that. In my opinion, it is a good, not great version of that. I think it's about if the sort of bell curve on one end, and with apologies to other people on this podcast, but if one end is like the saturated kind of like Assassin's Creed or whatever. Tower climb, get a bunch of icons. Thing.
Western, I know that's... Western open world design compared to Eastern. Let's just say that.
There you go. Okay,
that's the narrative I've seen in the press, which I think is a little fucked up because this is a Japanese developer. People are like, well, they developed it like a Horizon, like a Western open world game, and I'm just like, come on.
Rise of the Ronin? No, it's not. No, it is. If that's the scale, it is far close. It's like if we're starting in the middle. Move it another couple notches closer to Elden Ring than from the Western Horizon. It shares far more with Elden Ring than it would with the other. I think it's far more dynamic and emergent as far as how that stuff happens.
I think that the Horizon comparison that I heard was just saying like, yeah, you enter a new area and suddenly there's like a bunch of icons for things that you need to go do.
So literally no.
Really?
Okay, that is great. Patently untrue. The icons come in naturally as you explore these levels. Basically, so every there are three sort of major maps in the game for each of the game's acts. Each of those is then subdivided into like these regions. Each of those regions has what they call a bond level, which is essentially a bond level.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, you, English money, partner.
For example, you when you first go in, there might be one icon, which is like one of the banners, which
the
is
Def
like
Jam,
a, you know, the
icon. Yep, we get it.
There might be one, which is like the banner, which is your checkpoint or your bonfire, right? that sort of thing.
Yeah. Ubisoft has done this in open worlds, by the way.
Yeah, Assassin's Creed's that sort of thing
where you have to talk to NPCs to get and it adds an icon.
So like I said, I don't want to stereotype Ubisoft with that. It's just unfortunately the example that comes to mind with tower climbing and get a bunch of icons, right? You might have one. But then there can be random encounters along the way that happen. And, you know, it's like either rescue this person from this thing or someone wants alms for the poor. You can donate silver, whatever. That sort of thing. And so sort of piece by piece will gradually unveil more. Of course, every region has repeating things, right? There's villages to free and there's you find cats and you pet them, which is nice. There's fugitives to hunt down.
How much of a Ronin? I mean, it sounds like you are a Ronin-ass Ronin in this, right? So you are kind of a merc samurai at this point. Like
100%. It is very much, if the vibe is roam free and like free your blade to attack or not to attack and whatever, it's absolutely that. There's a faction choice kind of system. There's some pretty, like, it's literally, so the game is set at the end of the Edo period when trade is starting to open up, and I don't want to spoil who the first like true boss of the game is, but it's done with sincerity, but it is
Robert De Niro.
It is kind of
Ronin's Robert De Niro.
If you want to cut it, Michael, I'll tell you.
There's a killer car chase scene in this game,
Chris. Michael, you can cut it or bleep it here, whatever you want to do. The first major boss fight is Commodore Matthew Perry.
Wow. From Friends?
No, from history. You know, because this is basically like, you know,
I've read something that says like
if Bloodborne is Cthulhu Souls or whatever, right? This is Japanese history Souls.
Yeah, you're cutting your way through like soldiers on one of the black ships, which like that's an interesting place to begin.
So it's set at that time, and so as such, then you, as the game progresses, you're either going to align yourself with what they call the pro shogunate or the anti shogunate, and it's basically like, are you pro this alliance with the West? Are you anti this alliance? Like, are you with the man with the government who wants this to happen, or are you with the expulsionist who wants all the white people out,
expulsionist military dictator, or the glorious Meiji emperor who will guide Japan into a new new era of military dictatorship?
Oh, Tony, is that why you brought it up with the Shogun series? It's
why, because So like I was saying, I did a short kind of just not comparing the two because there's not really comparison to draw. But, you know, Shogun is halfway through its run. And now now this game's coming out. I think it can be easy to just kind of misunderstand where things
fall. They're sort of bookends.
So,
Shogun is the beginning of the Edo period. And this is the end.
I don't remember as a little kid. I think Shogun, the original miniseries, aired before I was born.
Yeah, it was.
You might have been like in the crib.
Yeah, and I remember my dad being like, "Shut the fuck up! This is the best thing I've ever seen in my whole life." And it aired across 8 nights, and I've always been a little curious about it, but it's a little hard to revisit. And I saw FX.
The
was
new
doing-
one is excellent. Yeah, yeah. It is very good. It is so good.
Oh, so there's this awesome companion piece to this game.
Basically, that Michael was saying that bookends it. Like, Shogun starts in 1600 at the start of the Edo period. And Rise of the Ronin is the end of the Edo period. So it is an interesting, you know, and that's the beginning of trade being closed off and then it being opened up again. And what I think is cool, too, is Neo, also from Team Ninja, of course, that is also starts at... starts in 1600. You play, like, the hero of Neo is a fictionalized version of William Adams, the famous, like, Englishman samurai.
Tom Cruise?
That Blackthorne is based on.
Yes. Mm. Yes, who Blackthorne from Shogun is based on. Yes, who Tom Cruise plays. Yeah.
Tom Cruise is The Last Samurai is the end of the Edo period. It's closer
right,
to...
No, yeah, he's the last white one.
Yeah,
he's not
the
first one.
Right, yeah.
You are the last white one.
Yeah, so basically, like this has been, like, for a lot of it, this has been Team Ninja's bag. Neo 2 is a little all over the place, in my opinion, but Neo 1, like, it's just very, you know, fascinating. you know, look at that. And then, of course, then they decided now we're going to do China with Wu Long, mm. right? And then we're going to do Final Fantasy for Final Fantasy. But what I also really appreciate about this is, yeah, there's some, you know, obviously the combat is above and beyond anything in reality, but it is still, this is very grounded. Like, you're not fighting yokai in this game. It is bandits and warriors and things like that. And they still manage to draw a lot of interesting stuff out of it. Like, I'm hooked. I want to go through it. I want to do everything on the map. I'm having a great time.
Can I just make a suggestion? And I know Team Ninja, you're listening. I get it. Yeah, big fans.
They love our English show.
Yeah. Yes. Team Ninja should take all the complex combat shit from the Neo games. Fucking make Bushido Blade. Can Team Ninja just please make a Bushido Blade already? Like, that's like a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
Same combat, just one hit kills.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Neo, right? Neo's...
Kinda, it feels like it. So like I was saying, Matt, this is the best version, I think, of what they've kind of been trying to do with that. It's very just rock, paper, scissors. It's just make sure the right thing.
I wanted it to be bad so that all I had to play was Dragon's Dogma. You could skip it.
I know, right? Isn't that the worst when you're like, oh no,
it's too many big games right now.
Well, I hate to say it, but
I haven't even started Rebirth, man.
You know one of the two will fail because of the other one.
Yeah,
right. Probably won't sell as much. So it's like one's going on sale soon. You know,
and I'm sorry if this sounds ignorant, but like I don't know how Breakout the Neo series was, which I did like, but Ghost of Tsushima was the big. I'm guessing they're different periods.
Ghost of Tsushima, that would be the question.
That's a good. I mean, Ghost of Tsushima. What was that? 2019.
Yeah. Mm.
So it's far enough away that it's hard for me to draw that much of a comparison. I mean, the one thing that comes to mind, and because I had to cut it for my short, is Ghost of Tsushima is like the 1300s. So right, it is also very different.
Sure,
time.
Sure. And they had no such combat intricacy as what this sounds like.
Yeah. So, okay. So trying to think back to it from what I can remember of it. So, you know, bear with me on it.
So I'm just realizing that 2019 was 5 years ago and not like, oh yeah, that was like last year or 2 years ago.
Yeah. I would say, oh, you know what? Here's one thing that comes to mind. In Ghost of Tsushima, it was, at least on the standard kind of playthroughs, it was easy to get overpowered pretty early on. And then you just kind of dominate the rest of the game.
Yep.
I will say, so that definitely never happens here. Like, I have died plenty of times because it's that kind of game, and most of them have been to not bosses, you know?
What if you're the only person who likes Wu Long in this podcast?
Here's the thing. I have not played. I have not played W-O. Final Fantasy or.
Woo! It stars Jada Pinkett Smith, and it's called Woo. The whistles go this.
It's important to say that I have only played Neo, Neo 2, and Rise of the Ronin. I have actually not played Final Fantasy Origin or Wo Long, so I can't directly compare to those, other than saying this is the first time it's going open world. So I would say, if we're comparing to Ghost of Tsushima, though, the difference is, I would say, it's less icon heavy. Like, there simply are fewer number of those kind of activities out there in the world. They're still fun to do. And it is much more about go roam and be free and see these things as it is go do these activities, if that makes sense, in terms of exploring the world. Like, literally, your collectibles are things like take a picture of this thing, find this shrine, pet this cat. It's not like combat challenge. Mm. You know, platforming challenge, right? It's not that.
Find the Sly Cooper outfit.
Like, it's not that. It's, you are roaming. You are a Ronin. It's very true to that sort of identity. So I would say it's less dense, I would say, than that in terms of, like, sort of the icon and activities, but with an ongoing, like, combat challenge, which I think is good. And one thing I like, too, about this, I think is really cool. There is co-op when you do specific missions because it kind of does the, you know, it is an open world thing. However, some quests are specifically like, now you're going to go to this place and do a specific mission there. So they still get a little bit of that in. I don't want to say it's like Elden Ring in the Legacy Dungeon thing, but if you need to think of it that way, you can, right? So with those, you can bring in some of your allies, which are various other samurai you meet along your way. Or you can do those online with people, which is cool. But one thing that's neat is I like is when you have those allies, specifically when it's NPCs, there's also an ability to switch between them during combat. So if one of you is just getting overwhelmed, you can just switch control of the other guy and start stabbing the boss in the back. So there's...
Hey, cool. Look at that. Battlefield 2 dynamics right here in your Rise of Ronin.
So yeah, I really am enjoying it. You know, I'm curious, you know, as we're recording this, I don't know... You know, my stamp is, I think it's, I'm having a great time. I think it's really fun. If you like what Team Ninja has made, absolutely play it. If you're wanting another of those Souls experiences, like, absolutely play it. I'm having a great time. I don't know what the overall critical whatever's going to be. I have a suspicion I'm going to be in a, not a small minority, but in a minority saying, hey, this is great. People should play it. But I'm enjoying it. I truly am.
Yeah, I'm having problems playing anything that isn't Helldivers right now. So.
I understand that too, man. I have to like set a night aside to be like, this is Helldivers.
I got a small little game called Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
That, yeah.
I haven't even started.
It was
Rebirth.
My most anticipated game of the year, and I didn't even buy it because of how much I liked Helldivers.
I've had it for like, what, 2 weeks now since it came out, and like have barely made any progress because I keep getting distracted by other stuff. Anyway,
it's we're in a gluttonous time still for releases.
Absolutely. So let's move along to news noise. News.
It's been a while, boys.
It's been a while.
Since I have introduced the VGA Hollywood segment, dude, this is gonna sound weird, but maybe not as weird when I tell you how old this thing is. So, The Sims is getting a movie again. By the way, you might remember there was a movie under development at Fox for years that then kind of got canceled back in 2007. Where it was in development in 2007, got canceled in 2019 in the wake of the whole Disney-Fox merger thing. But this is being resurrected, and this time it may have a good chance, because Margot Robbie, am I saying her name right? Is it Margot Robbie or Robbie?
I want you to pronounce it like that.
Margot Robbie.
I believe it's Oi Croiky.
It's Barbie. Barbie's company.
We call her that because she wears so many robes.
Barbie's company is producing, and it's being directed by one of the directors of the Loki TV series. So it's some good talent attached.
Some of the best MCU shit in this last 5 years, sadly. Yeah.
I would normally ask what a Sims thing would be about, but at the same time, what would a Barbie movie be about?
What would a Lego movie be about?
I thought Greta Gerwig would be more attached to adapting action figures and major conglomerate properties. I did not predict.
I hope she does Boglins next.
She should do Boglins, and then who were those squeeze toys that had bad breath? Oh, they were the best.
Do you remember
my ex,
the werewolf? I mean,
this is The Sims. This is a big thing that people still play.
I'm just saying. Like, I didn't expect Margot Robbie to be the magic ingredient in how to make this work. She didn't have a creative vision for Barbie. She knew where to. Higher creative vision,
but was Barbie her production company as well?
It was, and she's responsible for getting Greta Gerwig hired.
Okay, but the reason I was like, man, that sounds weird, but then it reminded me, The Sims is basically 25 years old. That's a quarter century. The Sims is created.
Yeah, I think a bunch of people not corrected us, but told us about what Sims life is like now. It is just a live game. It goes on all the time.
The Sims
is vibrant and crazy. There's a ton of people in there.
I mean, it's perfect for that.
Yeah.
It's too many things want to be service games, but The Sims is
accidentally
built for it.
One of the biggest service games, but you'll never hear about it from us other than this news.
I do wonder, because The Sims is at its core about simulating mundanity, that you are simulating the lives of the people you create. It's about playing God. So there's nothing too fantastical about this world. I mean, maybe you're going to make a movie about the goth family and, you know, the ghosts that, like, you can eliminate with, like, So one of the things I remember playing, like, The Sims 3 Pets expansion is, like, so they have, like, cats that follow you around, and you could explore haunted houses with your cat, and if the cat encountered a ghost, it could destroy it with its laser beam eyes. Like,
as a cat owner, they love haunted houses. Mysterious noises, all that shit. Cats are really into.
All this sounds better than Disney's last Haunted Mansion movie. So
that, yeah.
I'm with you on
that
one.
But like, I want to shit on it, but I never would have thought a Barbie movie would be good. The Dungeons & Dragons movie was pretty all right.
The Reese's one was excellent.
Yeah, it was pretty all right.
You know what this could be? That there hasn't been one of these in quite a while, not since Ed TV or The Truman Show. Like, you could make a good Sims Truman Show.
Right,
movie.
Right. Yeah. I think
Sims, that's kind of what I foresee.
What if they know they're
I was going to say the Lego movie where Will Ferrell is both the villain and God.
Yeah, yeah.
In that universe. Yeah. And it's going to have to be something like that—a sim
Which, by
breaking
the way,
out.
All of those. That's
yeah,
just
it's
the
either
plot
Truman
of Tron.
Show or Matrix.
Tron, thank you, Matt.
Tron, you're being controlled. They, you know, the gods they worship programs. Are literally being controlling them and programming them. So anyway, maybe.
Yeah, I just want to be like openly curious with it. Sims, you know what I mean? Because like, what could it be?
Let me be honest. I can't wait to not see it and comment about it on the show anyway.
I'm sure you'll see.
I just want to make sure that Katy Perry's. A similish version of Last Friday Night is in there.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, yeah. There's footage of her just, like, going for it. There's footage of her in the booth just going for it in Simlish, and it's honestly impressive.
So, it is GDC this week, and
GDC
is related to GDC and people talking about games engines and stuff like that. There was the State of Unreal 2024, which normally I wouldn't cover here because normally there's not a lot of game announcements, but actually there was a couple big game announcements, starting with Amy Hennig's new joint, Marvel 1943 Rise of Hydra, was revealed in it's a story trailer for a game that at the very end says not coming until next year. It's a 2025 game. We didn't see any game in this. This was fucking just a bunch of really cool looking cinematics.
The second time we saw this, but before
I was going to say, it's still more than we saw the first time.
It was
a press release. It was a press release saying like, we're making this, and I think we saw Cap and Black Panther maybe in the image.
What was weird though is they haven't announced the publisher. So this is like Skydance Games, which I think is the developer.
Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Yes.
Am I crazy? Did I think it was tied to EA when it was initially announced, or
you were
thinking
of Nemesis?
Amy Hennig was tied to EA a couple projects ago. She was working on a Star Wars.
Maybe that's where it is in my brain.
It was probably Nemesis. You have Nemesis in the brain.
That was like 20 years ago.
I know Tony though. It's just how he works.
All right. It's can't help it. I am my own nemesis. Much like Litz, I am my own worst enemy.
It's why Framework works.
No surprise to me. It's Marvel 1943.
Pass it in the front yard! Being Captain America!
It is weird seeing, even in video game form, anyone else playing Captain America other than Chris Evans. And whatever happened to the other Captain America show? Did that come out?
No, the movie is undergoing reshoots.
It's Captain America and Winter Soldier.
It's most bizarre.
Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yes.
If you don't know, Harrison Ford is replacing William Hurt. He will be Thunderbolt Ross, I believe, the president in the new movie, and also eventually Red Hulk. So that is so exciting.
They're trying to get a Thunderbirds movie.
You
want to
see a bored high Red Hulk?
Yeah. Finally, a way to channel his grouchiness.
I'm a Hulk, I guess.
I'm a Hulk. Thunderbirds assemble.
Just don't talk to me about it. I don't want to talk about it.
Get out of my house.
Carpenter. I should have been a carpenter.
So yeah, that looks good.
I got my ear pierced at 80.
I dated Ally McBeal. She said it looked good. I don't care. Don't blame me.
He did. He did do that.
I did it myself with an owl. AWL, not OWL. It's an old tool.
Oh, Jesus. Dune Awakening was shown off at this thing as well.
Sounds
again
terrible.
Skydance Media.
Survval crafting one? Or is that a different
game? It's an open world survival game. Yeah, open world in Dune, which if you've seen Dune, is all about survival because you got to save water and walk funny.
What a boring open world Dune is. Like, oh my God.
It's literally desert.
There is interesting stuff you can do with Dune in terms of games. Like the RTS, cool. Great idea for that. Crafting? Survival?
It should be like baby steps where you have to walk without rhythm so you don't attract the worm.
That's what it's true.
Oh, yes, a fumble core. Dune fumble core.
And you
can
collect sand and turn it into glass in like 70 years.
Mm-hmm. As it is written, we shall collect 10 pieces of iron.
Harvest your own Chris knife from the discarded teeth of Shai Hulud.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that thing where like, there are certain like now like sort of like buzzwords in gaming where I just start to roll my eyes and I'm like, I need more though. Like, you just tell me it's a crafting game. I'm like, all right, but where's the actual hook? Because that's not enough. Even if you say it's a crafting game on Dune, not enough. Eww. Like, it's just not.
You can make a mosquito in 70 years.
Well, Dune was one of the movies, by the way, that did use Unreal 5, like, in production of the film. Neat. So
sure.
I'm assuming...
I mean, listen, it looks really good.
Yeah.
The movies look... very good, yeah.
And made relatively cheaply for a modern Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Michael, I know you've been dying to talk about this. Tell us all about the new pop modes and DLC.
So, yes, Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown is getting new content, much of it free. The first wave of stuff called Warrior's Path. You can read about all this, by the way, on news.ubisoft.com, where I wrote about it. The first wave of content is out this week, Warrior's Path. It's out by the time you hear this. Adds a speedrun, a permadeath mode, and a speedrun mode, a permadeath mode, and new outfits for Sargon. Coming later, sometime in spring 2024, there's the boss attack update, which introduces a boss rush and even more Sargon outfits. Summer will see Divine Trials, which adds, let's see, I'm looking at the infographic, new combat, platform, and puzzle challenges, along with
that's what I want.
New amulets, even more new outfits, and more. And then sometime later in 2024, there'll be a new story DLC that is paid, and will introduce new story content, new stuff.
I'm down. Helldivers has taken up more of my time. In Prince of Persia this year, but Prince of Persia is still my favorite game this year.
I would not have predicted a content roadmap for a Metroidvania game.
Here we are.
And here we are.
Yeah. Months later.
Yeah. I mean, I am the sicko that just loved the Xerxes coin stuff. Like, it was so satisfying. And so it's 100% that game.
If your feet touch the floor, you do not get this.
Yeah. And I love how many of them you're just like, what's down this hallway? Boy, I have been platforming around a lot of spikes. Oh, guys, now I gotta go back.
Yeah. An orgy of spikes.
If you like the Xerxes coins, Rayman Legends and Rayman Origins also have the skull coins, which are very similar challenges. And that was like what clued me into like, oh, Prince of Persia: Lost Crown is a lot like the Rayman games, except much more refined and developed. And so, was able to talk to some of the people who made the game and who made the Rayman games also about, like, you know, what's some of the common DNA, like what are some of the lessons you learned. So that was fun. But getting to break this news again on news.ubisoft.com. Led to me getting mentioned once again by kind of funny Games Daily.
It warms my heart.
Yeah?
And I did not see this coming. Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown unveils new post-launch content. This comes from Mikhail Raparaz over at Ubisoft. Prince of Persia.
Late in that video, this is from the kind of funny Games Daily 3/13/24. Later in that video... Blessing gets a correction.
Let's see. Oh, Taylor writes in, Tayrell, sorry, writes in and says, Mikkel, who wrote up the Prince of Persia story, name is pronounced Michael Raparez. He's a game industry OG and the big homie.
So
Michael
surreal.
Raparez. There you go. Yeah. And then, why am I doing it wrong? I don't know why.
I don't know either.
Yeah, I just started hosting.
Anyway.
Thank you.
So thank you, T-Rell.
whoever wrote in that is much appreciated.
That was me, actually. That was me just posing as Tyrell. I was so mad at Tim. What's his name?
Gettys.
There it is.
Mm-hmm.
Or Gettys, maybe.
I was so mad at Time.
Oh, Time Gettys. Call him Time Gettys all week.
My favorite French wrestler.
A kid.
No, I'm stoked for this. Love the Xerxes things. I remember specifically the ones like I think they're at like the tippy top of the map almost in the archives where it's just you didn't even realize you could push the platforming in the game to that degree where you're like. Back, so good. So I'm so stoked for those, and then for the story to see. I'm really curious. I'd love to know where the Shadow Gimp disappeared to for half the game and apparently died off screen. I don't know if it's going to be related to her at all, but she kind of disappeared. So I'd be curious.
I want y'all to call me the Shadow Gimp from here on.
That's actually the final boss of Rise of the Ronin. The Shadow Gimp.
I'm curious. Also, I don't know what happened with her, so I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
But it's a great game.
It's a great game.
I'm with Chris as well. So far, it is my game of the year. There's a lot I have yet to play, but so far, it's in that spot. Mm. I got a feeling nothing's taken it out of the like top 10, at least this year. You know what I mean? It's one of the best. I love Metroidvanias. I frankly consider myself an expert in them, and it is one of the best I've ever played.
And I wish I worked for Ubisoft and I was paid to say that, but I'm not. It's just that good. It's very
I'm not either.
Good.
I'm doing stuff for IGN. Of course,
I'm not paid to say that it's good, but I do love it.
It's good. It's a fucking good game.
I mean, I am paid by Ubisoft, but not to say that it's good.
More people should play. And maybe they'll play it when the story DLC comes and there'll be like some Ultimate Edition or whatever. So,
it's very good. It also, you know, we were talking about Princess Peach coming out at the worst time. Prince of Persia dropped out. The perfect time.
Princess Peach of Persia is what you're saying? There's going to be a crossover game?
I was just about to say, what a cute royal couple for 2024.
They can unite two kingdoms. That'd be great.
Anyway, that's all the news that is fit to play.
Hooray. All right. Well, let's get in the community segment, which is always a segmenting our community. Last week's question of the week was, what game should be way forwarded next? Do you have an answer for this one, Tony? Like a franchise that you would like way forward to tackle?
This is a really good question. Thanks. You know what? Let them remake Zelda 2.
Yeah.
They already did.
Did they? Well, okay, yeah, the Adventure Time game. It was more or less a Zelda 2 remake. Hey, Ice King, why'd you steal our garbage? That one.
I think that'd be a thing. Are they doing this new Shantae as well?
That's their flagship, that's like their thing, right?
They did the recent operation, the OG, the
Contra Operation Contra OG. Galuga.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Galuga mesh.
Let them remake Zelda 2.
Yeah,
we've had some really cool Zelda games from non-Nintendo devs. Minish Cap is awesome. I mean, the CDI games are timeless. Come on, no,
they could remake the CDI games.
Yeah, like we've seen cool stuff with that. Give them Zelda 2.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Mm.
I would imagine the RZ devs are probably angling for that. Like, if anyone should remake Zelda CDI, it's us.
Mm-hmm. I love that that exists. Yeah. I love that that exists. I didn't really enjoy playing it much, but I love that it exists.
It's a fun concept.
On
Facebook, Chris Baker, the official Laser Time community.
Who?
Chris Baker says, my answer dates all the way back to my time at LucasArts when I'd sit in on marketing meetings as part of the PR team. I remember one meeting specifically focused on pre-order bonuses for The Force Unleashed. My suggestion, a playable retro-style game called Super Star Wars The Force Unleashed, which would adapt the real Force Unleashed to the style of the Super Star Wars trilogy.
Wow.
That was obviously way too ambitious for a pre-order bonus, but the idea of continuing Super Star Wars has stuck with me ever since. It's not just the fun Contra-like action that would almost certainly be even better in Way Forward's hands that I want to return to. It's the total Minox shit crazy liberties the games took in adapting the movies. Within the first 30 seconds of the first game, Luke is assaulted by ruthless birds, big scorpions that turn into little scorpions, and sandworms, let's just assume, are visiting from Arrakis. The level culminates in everyone's favorite moment from A New Hope, Luke's climactic battle with a walking Sarlacc pit. With all the content we've had since the original trilogy, from the prequel and sequel trilogies to the Clone Wars and the Mandalorian, I'd love to experience whatever insane new takes on the Star Wars galaxy they're willing to throw at us. Just maybe dial down the difficulty a bit. Did anyone ever beat all three games without cheat codes?
No!
So here's the thing. That idea, genius, by the way, and has happened several times already, and those spin-off little pre-order bonus things almost always are better than the full game that comes out. A little Bionic Commando Rearmed. Anybody? Bloodstained
Curse of the Moon.
Dark Void had that tie-in retro game that ended up
They re-released the Super Star Wars games to promote Battlefront under EA, and I think EA paid for it. But they weren't there because like someone wanted to preserve gaming. It was just like to revitalize your Star Wars fandom in the medium of gaming. Yeah. And so if they can crack them open and do this shit, you could make a more coherent, better Super Star Wars, which are the best like bit versions of Star Wars.
All right, from threads.net, CSL316
says, I just whooped your ass.
An obvious answer, Castlevania. I think that was your answer, Michael.
It was.
They have the Konami relationship. Their art would fit well with the anime style of the DS games, and they've dealt with gothic horror stuff on Blood Rain Betrayal. With Contra going back to the basics, I'd love to see them do a traditional level-based game rather than a Metroidvania, even though they've done that well with Shantae. Galuga shows me that they can get the essence of a classic series down. So let them pull a Shaft and resurrect Dracula. Shaft. You guys didn't laugh at my Galuga joke. Galuga. Come on, it just sounds like a classic old car horn.
Galuga. Yeah, that's a fucking no-brainer. I don't know why they haven't.
Tex Avery game.
The last 20 years, they've remade Contra twice and Castlevania none at all.
So they need to get on that.
Right. From the Hellside, formerly known as Twitch. Am I doing a good Matt?
That's good.
Tom from Full Install says, I would love for Sega to collaborate again with WayForward to continue the great work they started with the Aliens Infestation on DS. That game is so good. And resurrect the Aliens. I love Alien Storm. Alien Storm franchise. But in Metroidvania form, it was like the sci-fi counterpart to Golden Axe, except not boring and shit.
How dare you.
So, look, I'm no fan of the Golden Axe series, but I love Alien Storm. How many games have so many sequences set in convenience stores? So good. Make everyone
games.
Beg.
Yakuza games.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's an excellent point. But it's important.
Moving to Blue Sky, PC gamer Chris Antista Jr. says, I would love to see WayForward take on Darkwing Duck. Given their experience with animated characters like Shantae, I think they could do a great job with character designs, gadgets, voice acting, unlockable characters, traversing the city of St. Canard, and generally bringing the show to life. That's a great answer. Yeah, and actually, I want to tack on to my answer from earlier, Maui Mallard starring Donald Duck. That is another one I would love to see WayForward do.
I just had a big realization. So the man, literally the man who could make this happen, is doing a good job there at Disney's Interactive. His last name, it's John Drake. John Drake could theoretically make a Darkwing Duck.
Wow, he's a duck name and his last name?
Perfect. Perfection.
I met him when he worked on Rock Band. Is he on Disney stuff now?
He's doing all the Disney Interactive stuff.
If you've never played Darkwing Duck, it released 1 year into the Super Nintendo. It's one of the best games on the NES. Most people don't say that because they never played it.
Was that in the Afternoon Collection came out? The Capcom? Yeah. Okay.
It's very good. It's in the Mega Man engine.
So I bought that collection.
But guess what? It's a Disney game for kids, so it's not punishing. It's very fair. It's very it's beautiful. It's one of the best games ever.
What else is in that collection? There's a Tailspin game in there, right?
Tailspin is so good. And like you haven't played it yet. A man riding a woman riding a motorbike says on Blueski. I'm not sure any answer can beat Michael's, but in the same ears was Castlevania, right?
Yeah, it was.
But the same I'd like to say WayForward, or anyone really, should go back to Mystical Ninja.
Hell yeah.
Gambare
Goemon indeed.
Yeah.
Michael, that is the correct answer.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be...
Although, I got to give a little love to Russian Attack. Like, I think WayForward could Russian the shit out of Russian Attack. Yeah. Like,
I give no love to Russian Attacks, not after what they've done.
I believe Russian Attack expatriate.
Wasn't Russian Attack one of those evolved Konami games that have been lost on WiiWare? Along with Jackal and Contra and...
All I remember about that game, I owned it on NES, and it was like you had to infiltrate... You just had a knife.
Yeah.
You didn't have a gun. You just fucking stabbed
dudes.
Run to
the right
and
stab dudes.
Yeah.
And you liked it when it was called Shinobi.
I mean, yeah. Well, Shinobi had Shuriken.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually.
But yeah, Gunberg, I would love to see the Goemon series, the mystical ninja
series. Yeah, Goemon rules.
Revisited.
Just in some way.
I know there's like a bunch of games that came out that we never got. After we were getting Goemon games in the U.S.
That's when the Switch 2 launch game. Goemon Advent, Goemon Odyssey, let's go.
Yeah. Finally, we have a video response from Cody Smith, who says...
What's up, Video Game Apocalypse? Cody here. I'm doing a little bit of traveling for family, but I didn't want that to stop me from being able to answer the question of the week. And to me, one of the biggest recent surprises from WayForward was actually the Advance Wars 1 plus 2 Reboot Camp. And that made me think of taking a game in a slightly different direction. And I'd like to see what their take on Stardew Valley would be.
Ooh.
I think they'd come up with some unique ways that they could, like, I don't know, maybe improve farming in some way. I'm not honestly super into those games, but it would just be kind of interesting to see what they would do in the genre. Thanks for the show, guys, and we'll see you tonight.
Well, first off, didn't they just release an update or news about an update?
Yeah, he paused development on his Haunted Chocolatier game or whatever to do a new patch for Stardew. So it's still being worked on.
Yeah, because it just passed its, what, it's like 10th birthday or something? It just celebrated its 8th anniversary.
Second, I just want to point out Cody was wearing a Robert Loggia with orange juice t-shirt. Wasn't that like when you used to sell, Chris?
Billy.
Billy.
Your mother's right. I used to fuck her. You used to drink orange juice.
They tell Konami to let WayForward make their games.
Ahead of its time, that commercial. Good lord. Mm-hmm. Who would you listen to? I don't know. A character actor who's been in nothing I've ever seen? Joe Pantoliano? Like, it makes no sense.
Hey, drink your orange juice.
Or M. Emmett Walsh, R.I.P. He died today. He's a great character actor.
All right. So, thanks to everyone who answered our new question of the week. Inspired by Dragon's Dogma 2, what criminally overlooked / cult hit game needs a sequel glow up? I'll tell you what game needs a sequel glow up. It's a game that just re-released this week. Alpha Protocol.
I've never heard that by so many people.
Yeah.
Very good game.
Fantastic game developed by Obsidian, published by Sega. I went back and read my super review at GamesRadar, and it's like, I remember saying at the time, like, gameplay-wise, 7 out of 10, story-wise, easy 10 out of 10, because it lets you, it gives you a lot of leeway to sort of influence the storyline in what is essentially a Splinter Cell-like RPG. It's an action RPG where you're playing as a super spy, and you can... You can adopt various types of approaches. Like, do you want to be just like a brash dude who shoots first and asks questions later? Do you want to be a smarmy motherfucker who's always cracking quips at everything? Do you want to be diplomatic and try to get your enemies on your side, which is totally a thing you can do more often than you would think? It's a really fascinating game, and it was a lot of fun and showed a huge amount of potential. But it never got a sequel, and I would like to see it get one.
Like it.
Someone else go.
I wanted to yell about Enslaved just because I mentioned it while I confused Ninja Theory for Team Ninja.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that game has a very finite ending.
Yeah.
I just miss Andy Serkis. Like, motion capture looked like it was going to be like, this is how modern games will look. You will motion capture your actors. That game was great, and so was a ton of other Ninja Theory stuff. I thought I had another one in here, but I guess I don't. But Dragon's Dogma, like, the people who ended up loving it, like, loved it for how filled with potential it was. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of something similar. Someone else help me. Maybe I can.
I have one that had a recent remake, and we were hoping they were testing the waters. But I feel like it really deserves episodic. I don't know. Just fucking Ghost Trick. Someone make more Ghost Trick. Mm. Oh, someone,
yes, please. Yes, please. Yes, please.
Totally.
It's so good. That was the first time I, you know, it's given the given like the themes of the game, it's very poetic that it had a second chance. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember life, what I said about, like,
it is so good.
You cannot make a game where the ending is what makes it matter, because most people will never see that. Yeah. When you look at your achievements or your trophies, like, how am I in the top 1.4 percentile?
Because I played past the third level.
yeah, because most people never do that. They never do that. You cannot have a game
beautiful ending
that crescendo is at the ending. Game. You can't do
it. It's an ever. It's an ending that is beautiful, wonderful, and like changes your perception of everything that just happened.
Right. So smart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's such a good game. Oh, I guess it's to me. So this was a tricky one to think of. I had to like go back and look at some documents. This is one of my Google Docs of just, you know, random things. But Ghost Trick definitely up there for me too. But the one I'm gonna say, and I know this isn't gonna happen because it's under Warner's jurisdiction now, and they love to kill good ideas. There was a PlayStation 2 and Xbox era platformer called Taz Wanted.
I know.
I want you to picture, instead of like Mario, Super Mario going around and collecting stars, you are Taz going around every level destroying billboards, various billboards that are wanted posters of your name. So like, oh, you go in the museum level, one of them was like on the floor and you had to get rid of it by like finding the floor buffer and running over it. There is like, it is a game that... It's in like the formative games for me, for this is why I love platformers as much as I do. It is an awesome game. It's very unknown at this point in time, but it's a Taz game. I mean, come on. How great is
that?
It's
the game that launched 1,000 mall airbrush kiosks, right? Let's be
honest. Yeah, dude, 100%.
How many fucking Taz airbrush shirts did you see in the 90s?
I never wanted... multiple kids. Then when I went to the mall airbrush station, it was a guy who looked like he just threw a magic trick in the air and his children were in the moon above him. Like, oh, what a cheesy fucking... I want that tattooed on my car.
I'm gonna graft skin on your car so it can accept tattoos. Yeah.
George Méliès would be proud.
Yeah.
Interesting. Taz Wanted was published by Infogrames.
Huh. Infogrames, right. Please.
Their entertainment.
It's Grimm?
It's Grimm.
NASCAR Heat in Overdrive.
Interesting. Well, it's also them. But anyways, it's a Warner property, so you know, it ain't never happening. But it's a really cool game. I encourage people to... It's a Warner property, so I encourage
I did. If you didn't see that
find pirated copies.
That picture. My parents are like, what do you want for your birthday? I'm like... don't get me anything. Here's a $20 new Looney Tunes DVD. They could not find it in an Amazon search and got me an old one. I'm like, oh, cool. I already have this one. And my dad, like, threw something. Shit! Fuck! I wanted to get my son the thing he didn't have. I'm like, relax, man. Oh, my God.
Good thing they were waiting in the wings with Mickey Mouse cologne. Boy,
there are 7 Looney Tunes Blu-rays, and this is the last one, I'm positive. That company hates their brand to such a degree. Like, all the Looney Tunes shit, by the way, is on Warner Brothers Archive Collection, meaning you order it, and they print one for you, and they send it.
Damn, they still do that? Amazing.
Yeah, they don't send it to stores, because what store would hold a physical media product at this point? They send it to you. Sorry, wanted to lament. I love cartoons. Suck my dick. Tony, framework is great, but I hate you.
Thank you.
So, what criminally overlooked or cult hit game do you think needs a sequel? Let us know. Go to the official LaserTime community on Facebook. There'll be a thread there you can answer. Or ping us on Twitter, Threads, and Blue Sky at VG Apocalypse, and we will read the answers on next week's show. That's been our show. Tony.
We are more likely to answer your question than the developers who make that game, so make this count. Make it count.
All right. Tony, let's go to some plugs. Tony, once again, Framework, tell us about it. Where can people find you?
Yeah, best place to find it's just going to be going right to YouTube. I have all the other social links on there if you need them.
Chain Gun Pope, baby.
That is my Hellsite, formerly known as Twitter handle.
Oh,
yes.
My bad.
And I think, but I also, I am just literally just Tony Dash Wilson Blue Sky, I think. I think I literally just got my name, which is nice.
That's how people are prioritizing Blue Sky. I think I'm this.
Hmm. Yeah.
The service I don't
There's something afterward that I don't pay attention
yeah,
to.
I mean, I double a lot of the posts on both. But anyway, best thing to do is just to go to, because like, because here's the thing, dude. My channel's not about me. It's about the game I'm covering. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not injecting myself into that as much. But anyways, yeah, go to youtube.com/frameworkvideo. Easiest place to get there. I can pretty much guarantee I've covered some game you love at this point, or at the very least something in a genre or a playlist that's similar to that. So please do check it out. Yeah, I got a Shogun compared to Rise of the Ronin video up. Did some Final Fantasy recently. Covered some Wario stuff.
I've Ooh. Covered Wario this year.
Yeah.
The way you said Wario was very boring.
Sorry. That's pretty good. Well, we know Wario never changes, yeah.
Hey! So, it keeps going.
Actually, if you watch that essay on that, you'll see he very much does.
Wario has changed.
I'm fatter!
I have a change! Give me the cape!
Yeah, go check it out. And I got some other fun stuff planned. Like I said, don't want to brag on my own stuff because that's unbecoming, but like, I think it's pretty good. And there's an awful lot of comments telling me it should be more popular. Yes. So go play your part in making that happen.
It is seriously better than most of the game commentary out there. So Framework, mad plug.
Listen, there's a lot of people who I know do it better than me, who I love watching, but I know my stuff is worth watching too, so I'd appreciate it if you do.
Yeah, I love it. Framework, YouTube, check it out.
Thank you. And thank you guys for having me. As you know, I do love coming on.
Thank you again for being
on the
show.
You're only here because someone else died.
And for being on very late.
I know, you were going to have H. Emmett Smith on the
show. Yeah, we were going to have
Emmett Walsh
on the show.
Emmett Walsh on the...
Tell me all about the Hudsucker Company.
Oh, man. Thank you all for having me. I mean, you know, there'll be some more in the future.
I love you, Tony.
You know, hopefully getting some stuff ahead of the curve. So, yeah.
Patreon.com/lasertime helps this show, other shows. I'm so tired.
All right. Matt, you got anything?
I'm still playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and I just want to go play Final Fantasy
okay.
VII Rebirth.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. As always, you can visit us online at the official LaserTime community on Facebook, or visit us on Twitter, Threads, or Blue Sky at VG Apocalypse. Visit me personally on those places at Wikiparas, WIKIPARAZ. That's been our show. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
What was that horn? This is his preferred system, by the way.
Sometimes I hit the wrong key. Usually it's much easier.
Several of them.